as yet again he reaches for the law books over that. In other news, when it comes to strikes, it's Carry On Doctor.
We are at a point where the Resident Doctors Committee's expectations are beyond reasonable and realistic.
Health Secretary Wes Streeting speaking as it's announced resident doctors will strike over Easter. Plus, addicted to social media, Meta spokesperson Ashley Nicole Davis outside that court.
We will continue to defend ourselves vigorously as every case is different, and we remain confident in our record of protecting teens online.
Plus, Hugh, do you think you are kidding, Mr. Edwards? Do you really want to see the BBC, disgraced BBC sex offender, back on the box? I know I don't. Those stories and more after the 7 o'clock news on LBC.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 7 o'clock, Google and Meta say they will appeal after being found liable in a landmark addiction trial in the United States. A 20-year-old woman has been awarded £4.5 million in damages after the companies were found responsible for harm to her mental health. It's being seen as a bellwether case that could prompt further lawsuits against social media firms. Sir Keir Starmer says he'll study the ruling carefully, but admitted the UK needs to go further with safeguarding.
That's why we're consulting about issues such as banning social media for under-16s. I'm very keen that we do more on addictive features within social media. We've already taken the powers so that when we get to the end of the consultation, we don't have to wait years to implement this. But I want to be really clear, it's not if things are going to change. Things are going to change. The question is how much and what are we going to do?
Separately, Sir Keir Starmer has given the armed forces permission to board Russian oil tankers passing through the UK waters. The Prime Minister has accused Moscow of running a shadow fleet of ships to avoid sanctions and fund its war in Ukraine. President Trump has renewed his threats towards Iran, warning of hell if the country doesn't accept defeat. Tehran's foreign ministry has denied that peace talks are taking place. Iran's also put forward its own 5-point plan to end the war, which includes maintaining control of the Strait of Hormuz. Speaking at an event in Washington last night, Donald Trump said the US remains in control of the situation.
Nobody's ever seen anything like we're doing in the Middle East with Iran. And they are negotiating, by the way, and they want to make a deal so badly, but they're afraid to say it because they figure they'll be killed by their own people. They're also afraid they'll be killed by us. There's never been a head of a country that wanted that job less than being the head of Iran.
Britain's biggest police force says it'll resume arresting protesters for holding signs in support of the banned group Palestine Action. The Metropolitan Police has paused doing so in the last month after the High Court ruled the government ban was unlawful. But the Met says arrests will now restart, as an appeal against the ruling is likely to take several months. And Citizens Advice says it's already offering crisis support every 30 seconds to households ahead of next week's planned bill rises. The cost of council tax and water are among those increasing. The advisory service says it's helped more than 51,000 people so far this year. In the city, the FTSE 100 will reopen later at 10,106. It closed up 141 yesterday. The pound buys $1.33 and €1.15. LBC weather. A settled and dry day for much of the UK. Some patchy rain in the northwest later. A high of 11 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Hello, I'm the new deal or no deal scratch card from the National Lottery. The banker called. He doesn't think you have what it takes to beat him. But forget that guy. Play me today and you could be one of millions of instant winners and show that mean old money grabber who the real big deal is.
Pick up the new Deal or No Deal scratch card in store today. Search Dream Big Play Small. Rules apply. 18 plus.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Morning to you, 3 minutes after seven, Thursday, March the 26th. The idea of trying to extract more from the North Sea oil, whether it's gas or oil, not backed by the Prime Minister, who started citing quasi-judicial policy and effectively saying it's not up to him. Well, I thought he was the Prime Minister. Does Ed Miliband work for him? Or, as many suggest, is Ed Miliband actually running the country? We'll have more on that. To Iran, rejection of that 15-point peace plan. White House Press Secretary Caroline Leavitt.
President Trump does not bluff, and he is prepared to unleash hell. Iran should not miscalculate again.
In other news,
It's been described as one of the largest mass evictions by a private landlord. Residents handed Section 21s before a ban on no-fault evictions comes in from May. I'm LBC's Henry Riley in Colliers Wood.
What's your view of Reform UK? Well, for West Streeting, they're fueling racism.
It's the type of open, unapologetic racism I heard described to me from the 1970s. It is back. Reform fuel it, their politics benefit from it.
Plus that Meta ruling. But is it actually Meta's fault if someone is addicted to YouTube? Can't you equally be addicted to fast food, cigarettes, alcohol, addiction? We'll look at that later in the show.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
As I said at the top of the show, extraordinary times sometimes demand extraordinary measures. So the idea that we're sitting on a degree of oil and gas in the North Sea that we are not going to exploit or extract is at least puzzling. Now, we'll talk about the political debate that went on in Prime Minister's questions in just a moment, but as ever, when it comes to stories, normally best to deal with it chronologically. That is the easiest and most straightforward way to do this. So on Tuesday, it was very much part of a conversation I had with the Secretary of State for Business and Trade, Peter Carr. He was in exclusively on LBC with Call the Cabinet, and I asked him why the government isn't changing its stance, not allowing further exploration licences in the North Sea.
What we have to do is look to where the long-term sustainable energy generation is going to come from.
500 million barrels of oil would be quite handy, according to Ithaca, from the Rosebank field. That would be fantastic. Why don't we look at that? Well, the reality is Ed Miliband, for whatever reason, seems to be running this the cabinet and not the Prime Minister, isn't it?
No, that is not true. The Prime Minister runs the cabinet. Ed Miliband is responsible for energy policy. But look, enormous amounts of resource when it comes to renewables, but also the potential for nuclear. Now, the previous generations did not invest in nuclear. We are investing in nuclear, both large-scale production but also small modular reactors, for which will become, and this is a good example of it, because if we can get first to market with Rolls-Royce, which we have been backing and I have been backing as a government, this is an export opportunity.
You've got the head of Centrica, you've got the head of Octopus, you've got the former Prime Minister Sir Tony Blair, you've got the head of Renewables UK. Renewables UK, the wind industry lobby, saying there should be a rethink on North Sea oil. They're all wrong, and you and Ed Miliband are right.
Well, as I said, Ed Miliband is responsible for energy policy, and I'm sure he comes onto your show to talk in the details of the decisions that he makes over our energy
mix.
When
he's not running the cabinet.
But I have to say, into the very long term, I think most people understand that we have, in order to protect ourselves from the waves of volatility we see around the world, that we need to make sure we exploit the domestic resources we have.
So that was breakfast time Tuesday. A little over 24 hours later, the name of Ed Miliband actually popped from the lips of Sir Keir Starmer. He was challenged by the leader of the Conservative Committee, Boydenock, to get drilling in the North Sea.
The Jackdaw gas field could be up and running before winter. Yeah. All that gas would be used here in the UK to heat 1.6 million homes. That is enough to power Norfolk, Suffolk and Essex put together. So will the Prime Minister approve the licences or is the Energy Secretary running the government?
Yeah. Prime Minister...
Mr. Speaker, legislation has been passed. It's absolutely clear that the quasi-judicial duty under legislation rests with the Secretary of State. I really think, if she's going to put this challenge to me, she needs to read the legislation. That is the legislation that they applied for 14 years. It's exactly the legislation that they used to put the licences in place, which were then struck down because the process was defective. But, Mr. Speaker, let's be clear. When Russia invaded Ukraine, energy prices doubled. The 12-day war, oil prices hit £100 a barrel. In the last 4 weeks, because we're on the fossil fuel roller coaster, everybody has been held to ransom. The only way forward is to go further and faster on renewables. And the leader... Mr. Speaker, the leader of the opposition's approach is to outsource our foreign policy and let the US decide whether we go to war, to outsource our energy policy to Russia and Iran and let them set the price of energy. I will never do that because it's not in the British national interest.
Only this plodding PM would reach for the law book rather than try and balance the books with what we've got under the North Sea. And he can't do it because Ed Miliband is actually in charge. But The last time I looked, Ed Miliband reported to him. And as for the laws, who makes the bloody laws? It's them. Just change the laws. To Enrique Cornejo, who's Energy Policy Director at Offshore Energies UK. Good morning to you, sir. Can you give us an idea just how much resources there might be to be exploited or extracted? Good morning.
Hello, good morning, Nick. Pleasure to be with you. I think we need to be very clear here about what this debate is about, right? The debate is not about whether we use oil and gas, but where we get it from. Because it's very clear that even on a trajectory to meet net zero by 2050, in this country, we will still have demand for between 10 to 15 billion barrels of oil equivalent, right? So, you know, regardless of, you know, what we do, and it's definitely something, you know, supporting renewables is important, and we should do more of that. Regardless of that, we will need oil and gas. However, at the moment, with current projects and with the current pipeline as it stands, we're only on track to produce about a third of what we need between now and 2050. However, we have demonstrated to the government that with better investment conditions in the North Sea, we are able to unlock £50 billion of investment that could sustain production and could mean that we could meet half of that demand over the period. So it's really important here because more oil and gas we produce here makes us less volatile to geopolitical disruption, as you have seen over the last few weeks.
You've almost anticipated my next question, Enrique. I was going to say, what has the Iranian conflict done to brought to this dynamic?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that, that very clearly shows that, you know, we're vulnerable if we decide just to completely outsource the issue and just to become completely dependent on foreign oil and gas. And let me tell you something about how these two different scenarios would look like just when we're thinking about gas, right? So if we continue in the current trajectory where we have the energy profits levy in place until 2030, we do not unlock this investment I was talking about, and we wouldn't be able to sustain production. So that would mean that by 2035, we would be dependent on LNG for almost 50% of our gas supply. However, if we unlock investment, and I'll tell you in a second how we unlock that investment, and we sustain our production, reliance on LNG by 2035 could go to less than 10%. And it's really important to make this point because emissions coming from LNG are three times higher than the emissions from domestic gas produced here in the UK.
I have to move on, but I think there's a final point you referenced there. What is the final point you want to make, Enrique?
The final point I want to make is that the solution is there. The government have designed this mechanism called the oil and gas price mechanism that would replace the energy profits levy. We need that implemented now. And by implementing it now, we would still pay a windfall when oil and gas prices are higher, like today. But when they come down, then that unlocks investment that enables to sustain production, and that provides the energy security that we need.
Grateful for your time this morning. Thank you, Enrique Cornejo, your Energy Policy Director at Offshore Energies UK, 12 after 7. Listening to that, environmental campaigner Fergal McEntee joins me now. Your reaction to the debate yesterday, I imagine you're in support of where the Prime Minister was in his position yesterday. Good morning.
Yeah, morning, Nick. Some very interesting topics coming up in this. You know, we don't need to double down on oil and gas. The very thing that's put us into this crisis is the oil and gas market. And by doubling down, investing more in oil and gas, it's a short-term fix, okay?
But it would be our own oil and gas, of course, Fergal.
Well, it's not our own. It's going to be exported. It's going to be refined.
But let's not export it. That's the whole point of the debate, isn't it?
It's going to be, it's the Norwegian government is going to own it. It's Equinor who's going to be doing Rosebank. And
about Jackdaw?
Yeah, I might be Equinor as well, but the whole thing is...
Well, no, that's in British waters, Jackdaw. That could be online by the end of... Well, according to Kemi Badenoch, that could be online by the end of the year.
Yeah, okay, right, so we
but that's an argument to do it, surely, isn't it, no?
Yeah, but the thing is, you've got to look at this. It's a short-term fix. It's not going to bring down our prices. The prices are set by international market. Our electrical prices in the UK are set by the highest gas prices. What we need to be doing is double downing on renewables. Okay, if we go and we just extract oil and gas for like the next couple of years from Rosebank, it's going to be the first couple of years of high production, and then it's going to decline. Okay, it's at some point it's going to run out. So what you have to do is you have to take a long-term strategy. And the long-term strategy is we've got so much wind resources in the North Sea that we're harnessing. 50% of our electrical energy now comes from renewables. Okay, renewables is a success story in the United Kingdom. Okay, we're the world leader in offshore wind. We've got 650,000 people working in the low-carbon economy, which dwarfs the oil and gas. We can get all the people from the oil and gas, and we can teach them how to install renewables in less than a month. Okay, but we should be focusing on the future, not on the past.
But we are, in reality, with the Middle East conflict, surely we are where we are. We're not where we want to be. And as the Times newspaper says, although solar and wind power are clean and homegrown, they're also intermittent. When the wind and sun are not providing, we need a supply from a continuous source. That's true, isn't it?
No, the wind's always blowing somewhere in the world, and we know when the sun...
Well, not in the North Sea.
North Sea it is, yeah.
It's well, always, there's always, the wind is always blowing in the North Sea.
Somewhere between the Orkland Islands down to Denmark, there's wind blowing. Okay, we need to build interconnectors, more interconnectors, battery storage systems.
But there's 500 million barrels of oil and gas under the North Sea. Let's just get those, Fergal.
Yeah, but if you get them, you're going to burn them. You're going to burn them. It's going to blow our carbon budget, right? It's going to be destroy the future for the next generation. You know, you have to think long term here. You know, this is a short.
But don't we do a bit of both? Can't we surely do a bit of both? Of course, ultimately we want to get to more reliance, but to get us over this bump now, so that we're not as reliant on the Strait of Hormuz. Just lastly, we do tap into a little bit of what we got under the sea, surely.
No. Let's look at the future. Let's double down on renewables. Let's stop burning oil and gas. It's what's putting us into this problem in the first place.
Okay.
And let's secure the planet for kids in the future.
Have a good day. Fergal McEntee, thank you. Environmental campaigner, thanks for your input. And now over to you. To drill or not to drill, that is the question. And we'll take your reaction. Plus, mentioning Iran, what about that peace plan, the 15-point peace plan? President Trump was at a Republican fundraiser in Washington last night.
What we had to do is get rid of the cancer. We had to cut out the cancer. The cancer was Iran with a nuclear weapon. And we've cut it out. Now we're going to finish it off.
Well, he sounds completely on the level at the moment, doesn't he? 7:16 LBC News headlines. Dominic Ellis.
Google and Meta say they will appeal after being found liable in a landmark eviction trial in the United States. Two men arrested as part of an investigation into an arson attack on ambulances in North London have been released on bail. And Keir Starmer has given the armed forces permission to board Russian oil tankers passing through UK waters. LBC weather, a settled and dry day for much of the UK. Some patchy rain in the northwest, a high of 11 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Well, these delays do continue on the M25 anti-clockwise. It is very busy from junction 21 at the M1 round to 19 at Watford. It's following an accident where two lanes are closed, and two lanes are still closed as well on the M1 northbound just after junction 13 at Milton Keynes South following an accident. Both the Limehouse Link Tunnel and the Rotherhithe Tunnel are both closed, and that's causing severe delays in the area. And the Rettenham Turnpike, the A130, is closed northbound, and that's because of an accident. The investigation works are still taking place. On the A13 westbound, there are queues to Stamford La Hope. That's after an accident. The delays go all the way back to the Pitsea flyover.
This is LBC.
The all-new, all-electric Toyota CHR Plus. Sleek, stylish and quietly reliable. Available with 0% APR representative with £1,500 deposit contribution and save £1,500 with the electric car grant. Get that Toyota electric feeling. Visit your nearest Toyota centre. Price from £34,495. Available on Toyota PCP when financed through Toyota Financial Services by 30th of June 2026. Optional final payment. Indemnities may be required. See website. T's and C's apply.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060973. This is LBC.
Whether your dreams are calling you outdoors to reconnect with nature or towards moments of pampering and relaxation to rejuvenate your soul, you can bank on Lloyds to help make it happen. We've been asking listeners what their aspirations are for the year ahead to help create the ultimate prize packages to inspire that first step. Enter now for your chance to win one of three incredible experiences thanks to Lloyds and the nation's aspirations. Choose the prize for you at lbc.co.uk.
If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, what you thought you were getting may not be what you ended up with. From unexpected site fee increases, running costs, a huge depreciation in value, many owners feel they've been missold. If you think this might be you, holidayparkadvicecentre.co.uk could help you receive the compensation you're entitled to. Text ASSIST to 78900 to find out more. That's ASSIST to 78900.
It's not easy being a clamp stuck on the wheel of the one person on the street who didn't tax their car. Yeah, Graham at number 7, I'm talking about you. Bet the neighbourhood group chat is as well. Wish I had a group chat. Maybe I can chat to myself. Hi, Clampy. How's it going? Not great, Clampy. Being clamped to the only untaxed car for miles is so lonely. Over 98% of drivers tax their vehicle on time. Tax it. Don't risk it. Visit gov.uk/DVLA/taxit.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
20 minutes after 7, going to get your calls as to whether we should be drill, baby, drill, or as Sir Keir Starmer said yesterday, it's a quasi-judicial role of Ed Miliband to take that decision. I know, for some reason, Ed Miliband seems to be running the country at this moment. A wide range of stories on the front pages. I won't go through all of them, just some of them. It's day two of that NS&I, National Savings Investment Scandal, and it's the front page of the Daily Telegraph again. £400 million cost of savings scandal. More on that in our regular dive into the world of city and finance in a little over 10 minutes' time. Iran is make on a couple of the front pages, with The Guardian saying Iran rejects US ceasefire proposal amid attempts to keep talks alive. There's a very punchy front page of the Daily Mail. AI bot told teen to use a hammer to kill his mother. That's that very disturbing story that you heard on some of the bulletins yesterday. And let's perhaps finish with the I. Royal Navy forced to borrow warship from Germany, deepening fears on UK defences. Well, we are joined by the Defence Secretary later in this hour, John Healey. He'll be telling us how the powers have now been given to the British military to board these shadow ships, as they're called, from Russia, if it's thought that they're coming into British waters. He'll be talking about that, but we will ask him about that story as well. The LBC app, we played you a little bit of what he, President Trump, says. That gives you a full day update on that. Trump claims Iran wants a peace deal, which does seem to be slightly at odds with what it seems to be the reality. And lastly, the Sun Online, and I don't know if you've had the opportunity to see that very powerful Hugh Edwards docudrama, or whatever it's called, that was running on Channel 5, or was it the night before last? I managed to finish it off yesterday, because sadly, and this is no reflection on the show, by the way, it's more reflection on the hours I keep. I'm afraid I fell asleep on the night that it was transmitted, which again is nothing to do with the show. It's a very, very powerful show. And of course, it has stoked fury, as the Sun points. Why isn't Hugh Edwards in jail? Fume many after watching Martin Clunes' drama. I would suggest it's a career-defining performance for Mr. Clunes. Absolutely first rate. And how he managed it, and I'm not being rude here, they did have to pin his ears back. This is a fact. And he admits, by the way, apparently in a TV interview, but he is so good in that role. There's something really sinister and evil about that disgraced sex offender for Newsreader. Right, enough from me. Let's get your voices on the radio. The North Sea, to drill or not to drill? That is the question. Alicia in Chiswick, what is the answer? Good morning, Alicia.
Drill.
Hey, let's drill. What about the future of the planet for your children, your grandchildren and your grandchildren's children? Aren't you concerned about that?
Absolutely. No future, okay?
You don't want a future for them?
No. I want a future for them, but as the boys, you know, big boys.
I know, but the environmental argument is, of course, it's going to do so much destruction to the planet, and instead of continuing to use this, we should begin investing more in wind and in solar power. That's the country argument, Alicia.
Solar power is it's a dream. Windmills are a dream. Come on, we just need to drill. Honestly, it's easiest. It's cheapest.
Well, certainly there could be 500 million barrels of oil down there, so you're ready to drill. Alicia, great speaking with you. Have yourself a good day. John in Wallington, are you ready to drill, baby, drill? Good morning.
Morning, Nick. Yeah, drill, baby, drill, for sure, because in a time of global conflict, Nick, all forms of energy are invaluable. And what they should be doing, and I hope they're listening to this show, they should be doing energy war games. That's what they should be doing.
Energy war games. Tell me what that means.
Well, it means diversifying our supply. Keep all our irons in the fire. That's oil, gas, wind, even
solar.
Coal.
Yeah. You see, lastly, I don't think they need to be mutually expensive. I know you can only spend £1 once, but why don't we just get some of the oil to keep us going and continue further down the line for our children's children's children? Then they can have all the windmills they need.
Yeah, sure, but we don't know where this war's going, Nick. This is global conflict we're facing. And now he's given permission aboard the ghost ships, the Russian
shadow fleet or whatever.
Shadow fleet. What would that damage with a tactical nuclear weapon do to them oil farm, them wind farm?
Well, equally, because if they took out the drilling rigs as well, that would wipe out the oil supply from them. John, let's hope we don't go that far. Ned, you'll be the next caller. But let's go to other matters. John, you've referenced that conflict. And Tehran denied discussions have taken place, also dismissing America's 15-point plan to end the conflict.
President Trump does not bluff, and he is prepared to unleash hell. Iran should not miscalculate again. Their last miscalculation cost them their senior leadership, their Navy, their Air Force, and their air defense system.
That's Caroline Levitt giving us the latest. And at the Republican fundraiser I referenced earlier, it was held in Washington last night. Here's President Trump standing firm.
What we had to do is get rid of the cancer. We had to cut out the cancer. The cancer was Iran with a nuclear weapon. And we've cut it out. Now we're going to finish it off.
To Daniel Levy, who's president of the U.S. Middle East Project, former peace negotiator, and has advised a number of Israeli prime ministers, joining me now. The 15-point plan, this mysterious gift. Can you deduce exactly where we're going? And if so, do inform us, Mr. Levy. Good morning.
Good morning. Yes, picking through the utterances of the occupant of the Oval Office, not easy. I would say this is where we are. President Trump has seen the knock-on effects, eminently predictable, but apparently he wasn't informed of them. Were he in Israel to launch this unnecessary, I would call it war, rather than continue to pursue negotiations? He now has economic, political fallout to contend with. He has put forward something. I don't think one can call it a peace plan. I think it looks more like an attempt to dictate terms of surrender. Iran don't feel like they're in any position where they need to surrender. They have put forward a counter, also maximalist position of 5 points. But they are looking at this and saying, the last two times we were here in negotiations with the US, and they said, well, yeah, just in case these don't work out, we're also moving our battleships to your neighborhood. The US ended up in the middle of negotiations launching military strikes, once initiated by Israel last June, and this time initiated jointly by the US and Israel on February 28th. So this time, when there's more warships, airborne troops, Marines on their way, they are treating with a little bit of skepticism the idea that this might be a serious negotiation. The coincidence that Trump made his postponement of 5 days announcements just before the markets were going to open on Monday morning, which is something he does pay attention to, markets, added to that skepticism. Where we are is, if bottom line, I think this is not a war that is going well for the US, but wars aren't going well for anyone. There are costs to pay. This is a war which is having tremendous knock-on effects in the region and elsewhere. Here, in places where they're already down to less than a five-day week because of the cost of food, fuel, fertilizer, there are a lot of parties interested in bringing this to a close. Some of them have opened channels with the Americans and with the Iranians. They're seeing if there can be a way to stop this. I don't think there's going to be a kind of big deal with many, many points. What there might be is three victory speeches in Washington, Tehran, and Jerusalem. Each will have to decide how much truth there is in that victory speech, but a predictability that this brings it to an end. Would I put money on that right now? No, we're still in an escalatory logic.
Daniel, thanks for all the input. Daniel Levy, president of the U.S. Middle East Project, former peace negotiator and advised several Israeli prime ministers in years past. 7:28 is the time. Ned's in Cambridge. Come back to the impact of what Mr. Levy was just explaining. The knock-on, if you will, of the Iranian conflict. Should we be looking to exploit or extract more from the North Sea? Ned, which is it for you? Good morning.
Good morning to you. Nice to speak to you again. So I'm slightly on the fence about this one because I'll tell you a couple of true stories, if I may, and this might highlight it. It feels a bit Brexity, this argument. And it feels a bit like we should be jumping off in one direction or the other and everything will be brilliant. And I'm not sure about either. Now, I'll tell you this. A friend of mine is an oil and gas lawyer and has been for decades and decades. He went over to Chevron's head office in Paris some years ago, walks in, CEO sat there, and on his desk is these three cylinders. One's sandy, one's grey, and one's dark. And my friend says, what's this? And he goes, well, they're core samples from wells. Mm. And he went, all right. It's a sandy one, drilled out. The grey one, capped, it's getting too expensive to get the rest of it out, but we've got half of it out, and then the black one is a new well, right? Mm. And he went, all right, interesting. He goes, the CEO said, he goes, you know what? He said, John, the interesting thing is, all the oil that we've ever extracted, ever since we've been extracting oil in history, is still down there, but in the grey one, it's just a bit too spendy to get it out, so we capped it, and then we've moved on to other things, all right?
Yeah.
So there's plenty of oil and gas. Canada has more oil than Saudi Arabia, but it's in the sands and in the shale, which shreds machines, too expensive to get it out, right? So,
how interesting.
You know, if we want to pay, and obviously everyone's arguing about, well, petrol's going up and energy's going up, all right? So we've still got it. It just costs too much, all right?
Yeah.
So my argument is, we our energy prices are tied to gas. Now, I didn't know this. So the reason why we pay more than the French and everybody else does is because we use more gas. So if we're going to change the law, can't we just change the law to say, well, we're not, because it has to be tied to that, because it's costing us a blooming fortune.
Ned, fascinating talking to you. I've got to go to the news. I look forward to speaking to you again. You really made it come to life with those cylinders and the containers on that bloke's desk. Ned, thank you. You have yourself a safe day. We'll continue this conversation. Plus, later in the show, when it comes to strikes, it's a case of carry on, doctor.
We are at a point where the resident doctors' committee's expectations are beyond reasonable and realistic.
Health Secretary Wes Streeting speaking yesterday, responding to the fact that there'll be Easter strikes by resident doctors. That's later. 7:30, Breakfast with me, Nick Ferrari on LBC. Newstime, Dominic Ellis.
Sir Keir Starmer's promising to increase online protections for young people following a landmark ruling in the US. A jury in Los Angeles found tech firms Meta and Google were responsible for a woman's addiction to social media. Two men arrested in connection with an arson attack on four ambulances in North London have been released on bail. The vehicles belonging to a Jewish community group were set alight in Golders Green on Monday. And the Prime Minister has given the armed forces permission to board Russian oil tankers passing through UK waters. Sir Keir Starmer has accused Moscow of running a shadow fleet of ships to try and avoid sanctions to fund its war in Ukraine. LBC weather, a settled and dry day for much of the UK, some patchy rain in the northwest, a high of 11 degrees.
This is LBC.
Hi, I'm looking for a pair of jeans.
Right. Low, slung, slouchy, wide leg, bower leg, curved leg, flared, straight or skinny.
Blue?
Fashion. It's hard to keep on top of. Other things, like the upcoming changes to renting, are a bit easier. If you are a landlord and you have existing tenants, you must send them a copy of the government's information sheet by the 31st of May, or risk a fine. Find out more at gov.uk/renting-is-changing.
OK, who's all in for Cancer Research UK's Race for Life?
We're doing pretty muddy.
It's an obstacle course.
There's one for kids.
Runners.
Walkers.
Book clubbers.
Knit clubbers.
Hempin bowlers.
Choir singers.
Lake swimmers.
Gardeners.
Whether you climb it.
Slide it.
Or crawl it.
Go all in against cancer.
All in to help fund life-saving research. Sign up now and save 50% off entry to your local 3K, 5K, 10K or Pretty Muddy event. Search Race for Life. Discount ends April 19th, 2026. T's and C's apply.
Pain in my hip. I keep feeling dizzy. I'm getting migraines more often.
There's another way to contact your GP practice, by simply sending your symptoms and requests through their website or the NHS app. We're delivering an NHS fit for the future. Tap it, type it, and we'll take care of it.
Julia, how do you spell vertebrae?
Oh, just type pain in the neck.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
7:33, plenty of calls coming in on whether or not we should be looking to exploit or extract more from the North Sea. Nick and Vic, you'll be the next callers on that. Into the world of business now. Susanna Streeter is Chief Investment Strategist with Wealth Club and joins me now. And it's the second day of the latest scandal regarding NS&I. Remind the listeners how this started and how the story has moved on. Susanna, good morning.
Good morning. Yes, Nick. So as you've already been covering this week, I mean, the government-backed bank has been accused of a series of errors dating back years. There have been complaints. that NSNI withheld premium bond prizes from the families of deceased savers, some reporting the bank delayed payments, lost track of investments. Others were reportedly forced to turn to lawyers to help recover the money. So, as you say, it's a crisis evolving and a scandal, but there has been a development. We are now expecting that a compensation scheme will be put in place, and it could pay out hundreds of millions of pounds in compensation. We are expecting to hear from the Pensions Minister, Torsten Bell, later in the House of Commons, who is going to address the issue. And it's thought to potentially affect 37,000 customers. So a huge number. Already, NSNI has issued an apology that came yesterday, saying that they recognise that dealing with bereavement can be challenging. They would like to apologise to anyone who's not received the customer service that they should expect, especially at such a sensitive time. We'll have to see what Torsten Bell says later and who will foot the bill.
If you are one of those, I think it was 37,000, Susanna mentioned, if you're one of those people reflected, do give me a call, because this is a story we'll continue to keep a close eye on. Let's go to other matters. We're talking about aspects of the Iran war, and of course, as ever, Susanna, it has a business knock-on as well.
It certainly does. So, as you can imagine, we got the inflation numbers out yesterday. They're in a holding pattern for now, but it could be the calm before a summer storm of rising prices. And that is what the Bank of England will be keeping a close watch on. We've heard from a number of different policymakers from the bank. The latest is Megan Green. Now, she's considered to be a bit of a hawk, so actually voted against rate cuts in the past. And she is concerned about rising prices going forward. She says that hopes that supplies, oil and crude and gas supplies will return to normal were widely optimistic, even if there is a swifter resolution to the conflict. That doesn't look likely right now. We've got crude oil prices, I'm afraid, shooting higher again on markets, hovering around $104 a barrel now. What she's concerned about is the fact that, you know, Iran has already closed the Strait of Hormuz, caused this big disruption, and the markets and traders will know that they could do it again, even if the strait reopens. And, of course, there's all this damage to oil facilities. What they'll be keeping a watch on, though, is whether those higher energy prices will be passed on in terms of higher prices for goods and services across the economy. That's the real measure to watch. And they're expected to keep a really close eye on the data going forward. But we are expecting at least a couple of interest rate hikes this year.
Lastly, it's being hailed as possibly one of the biggest floats in American corporate history. It's an IPO, an initial offering, initial public offering. In what, though, Susanna?
Well, this is going to be a blockbuster. It's in SpaceX. This is Elon Musk's space company. It offers space launch services and, of course, its Starlink satellite system. And it is not an exaggeration to say this IPO has been hotly anticipated, expected to be a real blockbuster. And now there are rumours it could file for this IPO as soon as this week, which could mean it could launch in June. And now we're hearing that it's targeting a listing price which could give it a $1.75 trillion valuation. So an eye-watering sum of money, indeed.
Vast sum of money, and you're right, Susanna Street. I will leave it there. Thank you, Susanna. Your chief investment strategist at Wealth Club, 737. There's a wealth of oil available under the North Sea and gas, but we're not getting into it. I've got, actually, we've put a note together exactly what it's worth. Here we go, just while I... Before I come to you, Vic, on the North Sea, it's believed that Jackdaw, an undeveloped gas field in British waters, could start supplying the country as soon as this summer. And for oil, Ithaca Energy, the owner of Rosebank, described the site as entering the final stages of development, first production possibly by the end of this year. That was in its financial results published this month. Both sites were initially given approval in 2023, but then were overturned in the courts last year. Rosebank could generate up to 500 million barrels of oil and gas. Vic's in Heathcote. Vic, what should the decision be? Good morning.
No, Jill. Mick, I thought you were a fan. I thought you were a fan of context.
I love context.
Ah, then you've got to understand, and I'm sure you do. Probably just being a bit disingenuous.
How dare you?
In that, where does the oil that we, if we drill, baby, drill, get sold?
But I'm going to redo that as well. We're going to have our own. I'm going to change everything. Okay? So the international markets can go hang. I am going to bring prices down for the benefit of British citizens by tapping British oil and gas in British waters, employing as many British people as I can, and then in British pipelines, and to serve British citizens. And the international markets, I don't care.
Oh, I see. Oh, well, good luck with that.
Okay, thank you. By the way, yes, sir.
Did you also know that it's Norway own? I think it's about 70 or 85% of the gas in the North Sea as well.
So Jackdaw, Rosebank. I've got the figures in front of me. That's 500 million barrels of oil and gas, and that's not owned. Yeah, but I don't worry about them. Norwegians can do what Norwegians do. I don't care. It's the British war. It's the British. We are in enormous pain. I don't know whether you drive a motor vehicle. If you do, when you go to the forecourt, you'll see how prices of unleaded goes up. God, how awful to be running a haulage company at the moment with the price of diesel. We can't just sit on our hands. We are going to change things.
We won't, Nick. That's the whole point. It'll get sold on the open market.
That's what I say again. It won't, because I will bring in legislation, and instead of being a prime minister who says I can't do anything because of quasi-judicial powers enjoyed by Ed Miliband, brackets, who works for me, I will actually take powers and do it. Vic, I did enjoy our conversation. Be well. Thank you. Liam's in Dundee, closer to the North Sea than I am. Liam, your view. Good morning.
Morning, Nick. First time caller.
Good to have you on, sir.
We've got to keep drilling.
Right.
And also,
tell me why you say that.
Because it's a revenue that Ed Miliband is choosing to ignore. And if we're going to transition across to net zero, then it's money that could be used to help soften the blow, to help the transition across to net zero. We've got a massive welfare bill as well. We've got defence that's well underfunded. And he's choosing to ignore revenue that could be put towards these things as well. And when we talk about renewables and net zero, nothing's renewable about mining. Nothing's renewable about the trucks it's having to get the stuff to and from these renewable sites. Mm-hmm. There's nothing renewable about hydraulic oil, lubricating oil that's going to have to, use for all these wind farms and stuff like that. So why can't we drill, get the oil out of the ground? And as I work in the industry myself, I'm seeing the impact it's having across every trade. The anxiousness of not knowing when Ed Miliband is going to make.
What is it that you do exactly?
An instrument technician.
I see. So you're in this field, are you?
Yeah. Well, I literally just came back home yesterday.
Oh, yeah. How long are you? Are you out on a rig? Are you? Is that what you do?
Yeah.
How long is a what do you call it? A shift? A posting? How long are you over there for?
So we do 2 weeks on and 3 weeks off. So we do 2 weeks of 12-hour shifts, 7 till 7 for 2 weeks. Yeah, night shift.
That is hard graft, isn't it?
It is hard graft, but like I say, we're surrounded by so many talented, so many skilled workers that it's like this lunacy, this net zero lunacy that Ed Miliband is choosing to ignore opinion from everybody. I'm not saying we just continue for fossil fuels forever, because it's not there forever. I don't understand why he won't drill, take out what we can to help fund this transition across to renewables.
And you're there speaking firsthand. Liam, thank you. Enjoy your break. That is a shift, isn't it? My goodness me. Nick, I will try and come to you. I'm sorry, but we managed to get someone who actually works in the North Sea, so we'll get to you next. But that's after we go to another story. And, well, I'm afraid when it comes to strike action, it's a case of carry on, doctor. More strikes on the way. 6 days after Easter, Health Secretary Wes Streeting reacted.
I think, candidly, we've gone further than the public would probably want, let alone expect. And we are at a point where the resident doctors' committee's expectations are beyond reasonable and realistic.
To Dr. Callum Parr, resident doctor, deputy chair of the BMA Residents Doctors Committee. Why yet more industrial action? Doctor, good morning.
Good morning. So we're taking more industrial action because we've been negotiating with the government since January, making meaningful, good progress in that time until the last couple of weeks where the government decided to shift the goalpost, taking the money that we had discussed in terms of restoring doctors' pay and valuing doctors in our NHS. They decided to reduce that investment and then stretch what was remaining over 3 years, which fundamentally meant this wasn't a viable proposal. We took that to the committee, who rejected it, and therefore we are taking strike action to bring the government back to the table, to put that investment back on the table, and hopefully come to a deal that means no further strike action at all.
Wes Streeting says his offer after talks makes resident doctors pay 35% higher than it was 4 years ago. Do you recognise that figure?
Yeah, so in that time,
so
inflation...
So that's a 35% pay rise over 4 years.
So inflation in that time has been 28%.
But
so that's
you're,
even
you're,
a lot
you're,
of pay
you're
rise.
Not alone with inflation, Doctor.
Firefighters,
all my listeners who are in employment, they're all affected by employment, and their wages are. So Why should you not be satisfied with 35%?
So what I was about to say is that we recognise that this is a good start to restoring our pay to 2008 levels. We have made good progress in that time. However, what we're looking at going forward is the potential of further real terms pay cuts. This is on the background of 10 years of real terms pay cuts. So while we recognise that the government has started the journey, we need to continue on that to make sure that doctors' pay isn't eroded further. Because ultimately, if you let our pay erode further, we're going to lose doctors to other countries, other sectors, as we've been seeing.
But lastly, and it's not, I know you're going to say it's not a race to the bottom, but you must accept, compared with other public sector workers, 35% of refuse is beyond their wildest dreams. I know that you save lives. You're a fantastic body of men and women. We are hugely grateful for you. But why should you have such special treatment, Doctor?
So I support other workers who have fighting for their own pay restoration, who are asking for their own pay to be restored. But ultimately, I support resident doctors, I represent them, and I work alongside them as a resident doctor every day. And ultimately, our pay is still in real terms lower than all of those sectors when you think about the percentage change that's happened since 2008. We're asking only for that to be restored back to 2008 levels. Our job is massively harder than 2008. We look after massively complex patients compared to then. We don't deserve to be paid less in real terms than we did then. And that is all we're asking for. We're not asking for anything overnight. We're just asking to continue the journey of rebuilding our pay to the point that it's restored, and that's our ask.
Grateful to your time, Dr. Callum Parr, your resident doctor, and your deputy chair of the BMA Residents Doctors Committee. Nick in Holland Park, have to keep you to a minute because then we have to get to the headlines. To drill or not to drill, Nick, thanks for hanging on the line. What is your reaction? Good morning.
I just wanted to bust the myth that it will make any difference to the prices we pay if we drill their own gas. Mm-hmm. It's all about transport. We import 20% Americas from America, Mexico, and Brazil, and it has to be liquefied. And that liquefied gas, by the time it gets to the UK, costs double what natural piped gas from the North Sea costs. So it's a complete lie. These people are climate change zealots. And they're impoverishing us.
I will leave it there, Nick. Thank you. I'm glad that we got you on. Coming up after the news, we'll hear from the Defence Secretary as British military are given powers to board the so-called Shadow Fleet operation from Russia. But in a related conversation, why is the Royal Navy having to borrow warships from Germany? That's after this. 7:46 LBC News headlines. Dominic Ellis.
Sir Keir Starmer is promising to increase online protections for young people following a landmark ruling in the United States. Two men arrested as part of an investigation into an arson attack on ambulances in North London have been released on bail. And Britain's commandos will be able to board and seize Russia's shadow fleet of ships as they pass through UK waters. LBC weather, a settled and dry day for much of the UK. Patchy rain in the northwest, a high of 11 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Severe delays continue on the M25 anti-clockwise from Junction 21A at the A405 and Kings Langley at Junction 20. It was following an accident that happened earlier, but all the lanes are now back open. Now, these big problems continue in East London. The Rotherhithe Tunnel and the Limehouse Link Tunnel are both closed. This is causing severe delays on the Aspen Way back onto the A13, but all the other surrounding routes are also extremely congested, especially through Bermondsey. Also, the delays continue in West London with the A40 being closed both ways between the Northern Roundabout and the Marylebone Flyover for the ongoing works. And on the Underground, Hyde Park Corner Station is closed because of a shortage of staff.
This is LBC.
Get 25% off coffee and pastries at Cafe Nero with Compare the Market. Take it away, Sergey.
I need a Nero. I'm holding up for a Nero to get a flat white. It's gotta be strong, and it's gotta taste good, and it's gonna be made just right. I need a Nero.
Only with the Compare the Market app, the simplest way to save.
When you take out a qualifying product, one membership a year, 25% off barista-made drinks and pastries, app only, two codes per day, exclusions and T's and C's apply.
Call Nick Ferrari now, 0345 6060 973, LBC.
So, what's on your to-do list today? Why don't you check if you're eligible for pension credit? It tops up your pension income and also opens up help with heating bills, council tax, and more. Search pension credit on gov.uk or call 0800 99 1234. There's nothing to lose. Check today. Pension credit. Credit where credit's due. Eligibility criteria apply.
The Thameslink train is a place where you can wind down and catch up.
A chance to let conversations flow and plans unfold. And swap doomscrolling for telling stories. Too good for the group chat. Make the journey part of the joy and save 1/3 with off-peak group tickets at tenlinkrailway.com. Terms apply.
High pressure sales tactics, huge site fee increases, and a loss of value have left many holiday park homeowners feeling misled, angry, and trapped. The Holiday Park Advice Center can help claim back any money you're owed. Text advice to 78900.
Hello, Holiday Park Advice Center.
That's advice to 78900.
Turn up your taste buds with Dolmio Intensify pasta sauces. From mild creamy garlic and black pepper, to bold smoky garlic and sun-dried tomato,
whoa,
and spicy smoked paprika and chili.
Woo-hoo!
Try Dolmio Intensify, pasta sauces with serious flavour. Dolmio, yeah!
It's not easy being a clump, stuck on the wheel of the one person on the street who didn't tax their car. Yeah, Graham at number 7, I'm talking about you. Bet the neighbourhood group chat is as well. Wish I had a group chat. Maybe I can chat to myself.
Hi, Clampy. How's it going?
Not great, Clampy. Being clamped to the only untaxed car for miles is so lonely.
Over 98% of drivers tax their vehicle on time. Tax it. Don't risk it. Visit gov.uk/DVLA/taxit.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
10 minutes before 8 is the time. Let's feature some of the emails, texts and tweets that are coming in on our conversation. Social media, I should say, that are coming in. Daryl, who says he's confused in Dudley. What a load of tosh from these environmentalists. I don't understand why we can't get our oil out of our bit of the North Sea and use it to produce low-cost energy for us. I don't understand why we have to buy our own oil at the inflated market rate. John in Maidstone. A balance is needed. We've stopped using our own coal. We've nearly stopped using our own oil. We've nearly stopped using our own gas. Yet we ship wood chip from Canada to burn in our power stations. It's confusing. It is indeed. All right, let's move to other matters. And a determination now by the United Kingdom military now given permission to board sanctioned ships transiting UK waters, known perhaps as the Shadow Fleet. Here with more details, Defence Secretary John Healey joining me. Good to have you on, Secretary of State. What exactly is it then that the military are given permission to do, sir? Good morning.
Good morning. This is part of our ability to turn the screw on Putin's illegal flow of funding that fuels his war in Ukraine, and it sits alongside the nearly 600 Russian ships that we've sanctioned together with allies. We've taken a couple of hundred of those off the seas. We have seen Russian oil revenues cut by a quarter, but we can do more, and so. Having taken part in operations that the US and French have led already this year to seize some of this illegal shipping, I've now lined up the legal and military options, and the Prime Minister has confirmed that he's given the authorization for the UK to mount such an operation where we've got sanctioned ships running Russian oil through British waters.
Can you give me some context, Secretary of State? Do we have any idea how often this, how frequent these Shadow Fleet vessels actually come into our waters?
Well, the movement of these ships varies. The patterns change. But part of the importance of today's confirmation is that it's a signal to Putin that we're going to turn up the pressure on him. We're also, at the same time, going to step up our support for Ukraine so that he knows, despite all eyes being on the Middle East at the moment, we're not taking our eyes off Putin. We're not taking our eyes off the increasing aggression and activities that he's undertaking.
The Prime Minister is in, or will be in, Helsinki later today with a joint expeditionary force summit. What will we hear from him? Can you give us a bit of a curtain lifter on that?
I think you'll hear from him and those Baltic and Nordic nations, the JEF group of nations that the UK leads.
Joint Expeditionary Force, just to explain. Do go on, Mr. Healey. Yep, go ahead, Jeff.
Indeed, yep. The Joint Expeditionary Force is 10 nations that we lead, nations that are ready to act together, as we've demonstrated, to protect underwater cables. You'll hear confirmation that those JEF nations, which I've pulled together, defence ministers and military legal experts, are ready also to step up action on Russia's Shadow Fleet. But importantly, they will reaffirm our commitment to Putin and to President Zelensky that we'll step up our military support for them, our military aid support, and we'll stand with them as long as it takes for them to see off the Putin invasion.
Secretary of State, typically, what are these vessels carrying? What's their cargo?
Well, typically what's most valuable for Putin is the sanctioned oil supplies. He's selling it on the illicit market. He's raising revenue that funds his war in Ukraine, and where we can take further steps, including in the future now, seizing these illegal shadow ships where they're running oil through British waters. The Prime Minister is signalling that we're ready to do that.
You've probably been too busy this morning, you won't have had sight of newspapers, but in a related conversation, the front page of the I paper says that Britain will be unable to meet its NATO commitment next month because it does not have any warships available. We're going to have to borrow them from Germany. Is that story correct, and if so, why?
Well, we will always meet our NATO commitments, and I'm proud of the fact that the UK commits its independent nuclear deterrent in full to NATO. No other nation does that. And we contribute to almost every NATO exercise and operation. In terms of the regular maritime patrol that we were due to lead with a British warship, this is what good allies do. The Germans have stepped in to supply their warship, while I can deploy Dragon to reinforce defences in the Middle East. But that group, that ship, will still be commanded by a Royal Navy Commodore. It will still have his battle team on board.
But it'll be a German vessel, Secretary of State.
It'll be a German flagship vessel. It'll be commanded.
So we haven't even got a battleship or a warship to where we can lead this particular operation next month. That's surely hugely embarrassing for the Royal Navy and for you as Secretary of State for Defence.
No, it's a matter of decisions and pressures.
You're not embarrassed in any way at all, Secretary of State, that we have to borrow a ship from Germany to lead this operation next month?
Well, first, I'm really proud of the Navy and the civilian contractors.
I'm hugely proud. Indeed, I agree. My father served in the Army.
They've got Dragon ready in 6 days from a maintenance programme.
Yeah, we're not talking about Dragon, respectfully, sir. We're talking about the fact that this operation next month will have Royal Naval Command on a German ship because we haven't got one available. And you don't think that's a national embarrassment?
You know, first and foremost, that's a sign of the strength of NATO alliance. It's why that we defend, we train, we fight together with allies. But I'm not happy with the situation we have with British warships. And that's because it takes six years to build a warship, I tell you. You know, in the past 14 years of previous governments, they cut the number of frigates and destroyers by a quarter. They cut the number of mine-hunting ships by a half. They cut the defence budget by £12 billion in the first 5 years. We're starting to fix these problems. We can't do that overnight. But the fact that we're spending £300 million more on British shipbuilding this year is a sign that we're beginning to turn things round.
How many frigates do we have in the fleet?
We have 17 frigates and destroyers. It's down from 23 at the end of the last Labour government. And as I say, the number of mine hunters have been cut by more than a half. And so that we can meet not just the threats we face now, but the threats in the future, we're doubling down on some of the uncrewed mine hunting capabilities. And I have some of them already pre-positioned in the Middle East. But we can't turn this round overnight. We're putting the investment in now that will help us fix this.
But if we've got a fleet of 17,
few years.
Mr. Healy, if we've got a fleet of 17 in total, where are they all?
Well, every nation with every piece of its military kit has some in operation, some on deployment, some in states of readiness, some being repaired and maintained.
We only
it's
have one in operation.
Regular rhythm that is common to military planning.
We only have HMS Dragon in operation down there now. Where are all the other? Are all the others being repaired in some way, shape, or form?
I'm proud of what we're able to do. I'm proud of the fact that the forces
the
that we've
is,
got
are they all
have risen
the
to the challenges in the Middle East.
I know, sir, but are the others, are they all being repaired or are they not functioning correctly? 17 vessels. We would have known for months that we were heading this operation in April. Why did it not occur to someone, well, we're going to need one of our warships because we're commanding the operation in April, let's make sure it's available. Why did that not occur to anyone?
we were preparing Dragon for that flagship role.
So we have one warship available, because Dragon had to go, obviously, down to Cyprus.
I have to make decisions based on what we've got. We were preparing Dragon in order to play that flagship role. The way that Iran hit back in an indiscriminate, widespread way meant I needed to reinforce the defences that we'd already, before the conflict broke out, put into the Middle East. It's why our pilots have been able to fire defensive missions from day one. It's why our British pilots have now racked up over 1,000 hours of flight. And we can't just allow ourselves to focus fully on the Middle East. It's why we've had British Royal Navy ships shadowing Russian warships through the English Channel last week and in the first week of the Middle Eastern conflict. We face threats on a number of fronts. And my message, really, today on this is that Putin wants us to be distracted and preoccupied by the Middle Eastern conflict. People are rightly worried about that, but we won't take our eye off the Russian threats. We won't take our eye off Putin's activities and his increasing aggression.
Lastly, if I can take you to the Iranian conflict, what action will be taken to try and help secure safe passage across the Strait of Hormuz? Will Royal Naval vessels be deployed in that area, Mr. Healy?
Well, we are ready to play a leading role in bringing stability and shipping back to the Strait of Hormuz. We've got UK planners working with the US in their military headquarters. We coordinated that statement last week, now signed by over 40 countries, saying they're ready to contribute efforts to restore safe passage. Our Chief of the Defence Staff is co-chairing a meeting today of 35 other nations' military chiefs. But you know that the action must be multinational. It can't just be military. But the UK is ready to play a part in helping coordinate this.
Grateful for your time. Secretary of State John Healy explaining how now UK forces will be given permission to board the so-called Shadow Fleet. Mr. Healy, thank you. It's 8 o'clock, LBC News headlines.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom, the Prime Minister is promising to increase online protections for young people following a landmark ruling in the United States. A jury in Los Angeles has found the tech firms Meta and Google responsible for a woman's addiction to social media. The 20-year-old has been awarded £4.5 million in damages, with the result potentially prompting future lawsuits. Sir Keir Starmer says tougher regulation in the UK is a matter of when, not if.
I'm very keen that we do more on addictive features within social media. We've already taken the powers so that when we get to the end of the consultation, we don't have to wait years to implement this. But I want to be really clear, it's not if things are going to change. Things are going to change. The question is how much and what are we going to do? And that's what we're working on. I'll be saying some more about this tomorrow.
Google and Meta say they will appeal the ruling in the US. Two men arrested in connection with an arson attack in North London have been released on bail. Four ambulances belonging to a Jewish community group were set alight in Golders Green on Monday. The price of a barrel of Brent crude oil has risen above $104 after Iran again denied it's involved in talks with the United States. The Trump administration has threatened to unleash hell if its demands aren't met. President Trump has accused Tehran of being too frightened to admit it's in discussions to end the war. Britain's commandos will be able to board and seize Russia's Shadow Fleet vessels as they pass through UK waters. Sir Keir Starmer has accused Moscow of running ships without a national flag to try and avoid sanctions. The Defence Secretary John Healy's just told Nick the aim is to cut off funding for Russia's invasion of Ukraine.
Movement of these ships varies, the patterns change, but part of the importance of today's confirmation is that it's a signal to Putin that we're going to turn up the pressure on him. We're also at the same time going to step up our support for Ukraine so that he knows, despite all eyes being on the Middle East at the moment, we're not taking our eyes off Putin. We're not taking our eyes off the increasing aggression and activities that he's undertaking.
And Wales and Northern Ireland are hoping to set up a World Cup playoff final against each other. Both countries have to win their respective semi-finals tonight, though. Wales face Bosnia-Herzegovina, while Northern Ireland play Italy. In the city, the FTSE 100 just reopened at 10,106. It closed up 141 yesterday. The pound buys $1.33 and €1.15. LBC weather, a settled and dry day for much of the UK. Some patchy rain in the northwest later, a high of 11 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
It's the cinematic event of the year. Critics are saying a stunning, breathtaking triumph of savings. It's 2-for-1 cinema tickets from Compare the Market in cinemas all year.
That sounds like a great movie.
Sergey, it's no movie. It's 2-for-1 offer on cinema tickets.
Oh, yeah. I knew that.
Get 2-for-1 cinema tickets every Tuesday or Wednesday with the Compare the Market app. The simplest way to save.
When you take out a qualifying product to Compare the Market. One membership per year participating cinemas. Two standard tickets only. Cheapest free. T's and C's apply.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Once you 4 minutes after eight on Thursday, March the 26th, we are literally moving the show around as we speak, because we will come back to that conversation I've just had with the Secretary of State for Defence, John Healey, who didn't seem to have the numbers necessary to hand when I asked, how many frigates do we actually have? How many frigates do we have in the fleet?
We have 17 frigates and destroyers.
Fills you full of confidence, doesn't it? Meanwhile, in an operation we've known about probably for years, certainly for months, next month, the Royal Navy is in command of this, but they'll be doing it from a German warship. We'll come to that in more detail. In other news, addicted to social media.
Could more legal cases be on the way for Google and Meta? They've both been found liable for a woman's social media addiction in a landmark lawsuit that says they made their platforms addictive. I'm LBC's technology correspondent Will Guyatt, and I'll be talking to Nick later in the show.
And later in the show...
It's been described as one of the largest mass evictions by a private landlord. Residents handed Section 21s before a ban on no-fault evictions comes in from May. I'm LBC's Henry Riley in Colliers Wood.
And then later in the show, Hugh, do you think you are kidding, Mr. Edwards? The idea, disgraced sex offender, former BBC newsreader Hugh Edwards wants to make some form of comeback? Have you seen that docudrama, as it's called? We'll look at that in the next hour.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
Right, we're literally moving the show around as we speak, because the reaction that I've had from my conversation with the Secretary of State for John Healey was asked some pretty simple questions. I don't often refer to this, but a lot of you are saying this is another Diane Abbott moment. Because if you didn't hear it, and I appreciate a lot of your alarm clocks sounded 6 minutes ago, why on earth did Nick say that? It's 6 minutes after eight. Then you won't have heard it. Mr. Healey came on to talk about the fact that the UK forces will now be given permission to board what's called the Shadow Fleet. This is Vladimir Putin. It's typically taking oil supplies, which he then sells on illicit markets. But I did get into a conversation about a story that's on the front page of one of the newspapers, The Eye, which I read to him, which is that the UK will still be in command of a task force meeting next month as part of operations in the Baltic and Atlantic Oceans. It will be commanded by the Royal Navy, but the Royal Navy command will be on a German warship because we don't have any. I asked him, I started off in this part of the interview by saying, how come we have no British ships for the Royal Navy to command the US operation that we saw coming years ago?
Well, first, I'm really proud of the Navy and the civilian contractors.
I'm hugely proud. Indeed, I agree. My father served in the Army.
They've got Dragon ready in 6 days from a maintenance programme.
Yeah, we're not talking about Dragon, respectfully, sir. We're talking about the fact that this operation next month will have Royal Naval Command on a German ship because we haven't got one available. And you don't think that's a national embarrassment?
You know, first and foremost, that's a sign of the strength of NATO alliance. It's why that we defend, we train, we fight together with allies. But I'm not happy with the situation we have with British warships. And that's because it takes six years to build a warship, I tell you. You know, in the past 14 years of previous governments, they cut the number of frigates and destroyers by a quarter. They cut the number of mine-hunting ships by a half. They cut the defence budget by £12 billion in the first 5 years. We're starting to fix these problems. We can't do that overnight. But the fact that we're spending £300 million more on British shipbuilding this year is a sign that we're beginning to turn things round.
How many frigates do we have in the fleet?
We have We have 17 frigates and destroyers. It's down from 23 at the end of the last Labour government. And as I say, the number of mine hunters have been cut by more than a half. And so that we can meet not just the threats we face now, but the threats in the future, we're doubling down on some of the uncrewed mine hunting capabilities. And I have some of them already pre-positioned in the Middle East. But we can't turn this round overnight. We're putting the investment in now that will help us fix this.
But if we've got a fleet of 17, Mr. Healy, if we've got a fleet of 17 in total, where are they all?
Well, every nation, with every piece of its military kit, has some in operation, some on deployment, some in states of readiness, some being repaired and maintained.
We only
have
one in operation.
Regular rhythm that is common to military planning.
We only have HMS Dragon in operation down there now. Where are all the other? Are all the others being repaired in some way, shape, or form?
I'm proud of what we're able to do. I'm proud of the fact that the forces
the
we've got
are they all
have risen
the
to the challenges in the Middle East.
I know, sir, but are the others, are they all being repaired, or is there some, are they not functioning correctly? 17 vessels. We would have known for months that we were heading this operation in April. Why did it not occur to someone, well, we're going to need one of our warships because we're commanding the operation in April, let's make sure it's available. Why did that not occur to anyone?
We were preparing Dragon for that flagship role.
So we have one warship available because Dragon had to go to Cyprus.
I have to make decisions based on what we've got. We were preparing Dragon in order to play that flagship role. The way that Iran hit back in an indiscriminate, widespread way meant I needed to reinforce the defences that we'd already, before the conflict broke out, put into the Middle East. It's why our pilots have been able to fly defensive missions from day one. It's why our British pilots have now racked up over 1,000 hours of flight. And we can't just allow ourselves to focus fully on the Middle East. It's why we've had British Royal Navy ships shadowing Russian warships through the English Channel last week and in the first week of the Middle Eastern conflict. We face threats on a number of fronts. And my message really today on this is that Putin wants us to be distracted and preoccupied by the Middle Eastern conflict. People are rightly worried about that, but we won't take our eye off the Russian threats. We won't take our eye off Putin's activities and his increasing aggression.
Let's bring to the conversation Trevor Kavanagh, who's a former award-winning political editor and columnist with the Sun newspaper, joins me now. Trevor, it's a question, if this is inheritance or incompetence? Inheritance of 14 years of bad decisions in the Ministry of Defence or incompetence by the current incumbent? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Well, I think it's a combination of both. Obviously, underspending, underinvesting over many years, cost-cutting, which is the result of the fall of the Berlin Wall many years ago now, which allegedly brought a peace dividend, which has since been squandered by every government since. And we are literally, I feel sorry for John Healey, who is one of the decent, sane members of this mad government. But you left him, the defence secretary, completely defenceless. He had nothing to fight back with. There is no, there's hardly any army, hardly any navy, and we've got a tiny air force.
And the Royal Navy is in command of this operation in the Baltic and the Atlantic, and we'll be doing it from a German battleship, Trevor.
How humiliating is that? The situation really was summed up by his stumbling response, which gave away the fact that he had nothing to say, nothing to offer, no weapons to offer, no ships. And he doesn't even know where they are. The ones that the 17 frigates that he claimed we had at our disposal, where are they? He couldn't say.
Lastly, the Prime Minister is in Helsinki at this JEF Joint Expeditionary Force Summit. Obviously, we're going to hear warm words about the alliance, about NATO, but in reality, as you referenced earlier, we've had a peace dividend. We're trying to get defence on the cheap, aren't we, Trevor?
Well, we have been for a very long time, but I think that the wake-up call has been made loud and clear over the last
4 years during the war in Ukraine. And I think that certain European members of NATO have responded by stepping up their better spending on defence. That isn't happening in Britain. And we must remember that the Labour government now in office keeps saying that they've been picking up the problems and disasters of the previous 14 Tory years. But they've been in government for 2 years now. They cannot keep using that excuse.
Trevor Kavanagh, a former political editor, award-winning columnist at The Sun, thank you for your input. 13 after 8. Let's get to your voices on the radio, particularly if, as I think my next guest has, if you have served in the military forces. Yes. Hugh in Battersea, if it's the Hugh I think it is. Morning, Hugh.
Good morning, Nick. Good morning.
Yes, morning.
I'd like to pose a question. Is the minister with you?
No. He's gone.
An edict has been sent out from main building, either headquarters of the armed forces, to all army commanders that training now must be done, for brackets, free. Therefore, we currently have soldiers running around Salisbury Plain shouting bang, bang, because they've got no blank firing ammunition.
Is this... Have you heard this from someone that you served with?
Well, you know my...
I know your background.
Yeah, my contacts
I know
are
your,
Army Board.
I know who you're... Yeah, okay.
Contacts are at Army Board level.
I know one of them. Right. So that's what it's come to, Hugh.
It's come to our soldiers shouting bang, bang, you know, because they've got no blank firing ammunition. And this is not new. This is not new, Nick, because in the first Gulf War, which I was involved with, we were having to use L2 grenades that were produced, wait for it, in 1952.
Good God. That was
and half of them didn't even go off.
That's 1992, yeah. The first Gulf War, as I remember.
1990
was it, I'm so
yeah,
sorry.
And we were using ammunition from 1952, and nothing has changed.
Lastly, with what we see in Ukraine, with what we see in Iran, if we had to defend king and country, are we able to do it, do you think?
No.
Well, I rather feel you're right. Thank you for your service. Thanks for your call. Good to hear from you again. We'll have more reaction on that after the 8:15 LBC News headlines. Dominic Ellis.
The Prime Minister is promising to increase online protections for young people following a landmark ruling in the United States. Two men arrested in connection with an arson attack in North London have been released on bail. And speaking to Nick, the Defence Secretary has confirmed that the UK is to borrow a German warship to take part in NATO duties next month. LBC weather, a settled and dry day for much of the UK. Some patchy rain in the northwest later, a high of 11 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. There are long queues on the M25 clockwise heading towards junction 16 at the M40. It's because of an accident, and then further along clockwise there are delays from junction 20 at King's Langley to 21 at the M1, and that's also after an accident. Now, these big problems in East London do continue. The Rotherhithe Tunnel and the Limehouse Link Tunnel are both closed because of a technical problem. This is causing severe delays in the area, especially around Bermondsey on the Aspen Way and on the West India Dock Road and the A13. Then in West London, the A40 remains closed both ways between the Northern Roundabout and the Marylebone Flyover for the ongoing works, and that's also causing delays in the area.
This is LBC.
Amazon offers term time working to their employees, like Anton, who's home to look after his daughters during their holidays.
Hello!
To him, this is the best sound in the world. Actually, maybe that's the best sound of all. Now that's term time working. Offered at Amazon. 10 weeks off guaranteed per year. Mix of paid holiday and unpaid time off. Conditions apply.
This is LBC. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app. Download it now from your app store.
Do you know your state pension age? No. Maybe you're not sure. Or you don't know how to check. It's so quick and easy to check online. All you need is your date of birth. Knowing your state pension age helps you think about your future. So check yours today. Search state pension age on gov.uk and simply enter your date of birth. State pension age. It's good to know.
Cancer doesn't care about childhood. It doesn't care what they miss out on or how much you want to protect them. But we do. At Great Ormond Street Hospital Charity, we fund life-saving research vital family support, and the special things that help seriously ill kids be kids. Until no childhood is lost to cancer. Join us. Search GOSH Charity.
I'm Natasha, and this is my NHS story. I went to the GP because I'd found a lump in my breast, and the GP referred me to a CDC centre. It was just really welcoming from the moment I arrived. To just be reassured all in one day was fantastic.
The government is opening new community diagnostic centres, with many already available 12 hours a day, 7 days a week, so the NHS can be there for all of us when we need it. Find your closest one at gov.uk/NHS Fit for the Future. Available England-wide.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
A bit more of your calls, Steve. I'm just going to feature some of the social media reaction that's coming in, and I'm afraid the reviews for Mr. Healy are not very strong. Patricia says, are we really relying on the Secretary of State to defend us? He couldn't get his words out quick enough to shout fire to knock an incoming missile out of the sky. This comes from Alan, the Secretary of Defence. Secretary of State for Defence has just showed how defenceless this country is. I'm speechless. And this from S. Solomon. I'm sick and tired of Labour every time they're interviewed, blaming the Tories for everything. I'm a Tory supporter. Yes, they made some bad decisions, but I've seen and read articles from military experts that say our defence budgets were cut over the last 40 years by both parties. That's the so-called peace dividend. I think it's Mr. Solomon. I just have S. Solomon. I think it's Mr. Solomon. And that's where it's coming back to, as Trevor Cameron was pointing out. 20 minutes after 8, Steve's in Islington. Steve, your reaction to what you heard. Good morning.
Oh, good morning, Nick. That was pathetic. I felt embarrassed for that guy. He don't even know how many ships we've got.
No.
This government is an absolute laughing stock. Absolutely. God help us if we have to go to war, Nick. That's all I've got to say. God help us, mate, when we're using grenades.
Let me ask you this final, then I will let you go. The fact that the British, that the United Kingdom takes control of this joint expedition and this operation in the Atlantic and the Baltic from a German ship, how does that strike you?
It strikes me as absolutely embarrassing, absolutely beyond belief, beyond belief.
It is, I've got the name of it now, the German, it is the German frigate Sachsen, if that's how you say it, which will take over from HMS Dragon, because as we know, Dragon is down at Cyprus, and we haven't got an, I mean, this is incredible. I would imagine, thanks Steve, I would imagine they have known, what do you think, for years? Certainly for months, certainly, when the government came in, by the way, just so you know, April 2026, we are in command of joint operations with some of our NATO colleagues in the Atlantic and the Baltic. Oh, great, OK, well, we must have a battleship to do that. No, let's send our only battleship to Cyprus and borrow a ship from Germany. Richard's in Ealing. Richard, you're on the radio. Good morning.
Good morning, Nick.
Your point, sir.
My point, well, I served 17 years in the Navy. All sort of very familiar. I was in patrolling, the Miller Patrol in the Straits of Hormuz in the late 80s during the Iran-Iraq War. So it's been done before. It's not something new they've got to invent. And the problem with the Secretary of Defence is that he says we have 17 frigates and destroyers, but how many of those are operational? We know that four of Type 45 destroyers, Dragon type, are waiting for this propulsion improvement project because they can't operate in warm waters. You can make this up.
When you're, as you served, what is the reaction for the men and women you serve alongside when you hear these politicians and you see the decisions and some of the operational matters that they take on?
It's deeply embarrassing. I feel wholeheartedly for the crew of the Dragon. They will be working tirelessly because it's what you do. It's your job to try and get that. And my fear, and I hope that they haven't, is that they put them in harm's way because some of those systems aren't working correctly.
Thank you for your service. Thank you for your call. Now, a lot of people are picking up on the fact that he might have got his numbers wrong. Paul says we only have 13 frigates and destroyers. He said 17. That's actually what our research said. And this comes in from Lee. We have six Type 45 destroyers and seven Type 23 frigates. Very few are seaworthy. We are a laughing stock. It might be that he didn't even get the number right. Let's triple-check that if we can. Thanks. Pat in Redbridge. Pat, are you ready? Do you think the country is ready to defend itself? King and country, good morning.
Yes, good morning to you, Nick. I never speak to you before, but I've listened to you over the years.
Okay, thank you, sir.
Yes, this country is not available to do, is not capable of defending itself. I mean, the question, you did a very good interview with him, but I would have liked if you had said to him, how many kills has this government laid in the last 2 years? How many plans have they got to prepare in to actually build some ships? None.
And the point being, of course, the world is getting a very risky and dangerous place. If you look at Ukraine, if you look at Iran, I would argue that we probably need to be almost in the 1930s at the level of defence, and we're not. We cannot even muster a battleship so that we can command a NATO exercise.
We are the laughing stock of the world. We really are. You know, despite what all the people say officially, the Europeans, the French and the Germans, behind our backs, they're sniggering at us.
Pat, thank you. Brian's in Rayleigh. Brian, your reaction. Good morning.
Oh, it's unbelievable. It's just two quick points, Nick. I'm looking at the Royal Navy recruiting advert on the internet. And
right.
It says organisation, surface fleet,
right.
Resilient, resourceful, ready, capable of taking on any maritime military operations at a moment's notice. The other point is, when I was in the Air Force, I used to do the statistics for serviceability of boat, rescue boats, believe it or not, a long time ago. But first thing you have, if you're a military organisation, is you know what's going on. You know, you didn't have a clue. You find out the serviceability of your aircraft and, you know, how many are being repaired and how many are ready to go. I mean, that guy didn't have a clue. He doesn't even know how many ships we got. It was 65 to 70, apparently, according to the stats I could find.
Well, of course, it depends what they are. I mean, some of those might be, and I am not a Royal Naval man, but some of those are possibly going to be mine hunters and not frigates or destroyers. In fact, of course,
we've got two aircraft carriers, which are very big, but the German Navy is basically the same size as ours, according to this.
Grateful for your input, Brian. Thank you, and thanks for your service in the Air Force. Sean in... Ah, hello, Sean in Tavistock. How are you? You well?
Yeah, just back from Barbados, Nick. Freezing. Freezing cold.
You're ex-military as well.
80 service, yeah, all the 80s. So we had bad accommodation. It was that bad we never paid for it in the Army, then in Chattanooga and Kent. But we had the best equipment post with Wright and bombing, so the money went into research and development. But we just cracked on with it. But what you need is a senior officer, the chief of general staff, standing up to the politicians demanding more money. General Dannett did that last, and he was forfeited his promotion to chief of general staff because of it.
Right.
If you get a senior officer on your side, like Montgomery during the Second World War, you won't go into the other ready... Got them, you need that senior officer to approach the politicians. Otherwise, they're going to walk all over you. There's no representation.
Again, able to defend ourselves, king and country, at the moment, Sean?
Some things we don't know about, Nick. A lot of things go on behind the scenes. They fought something like 30 attacks by Iranian terrorists on the mainland. A lot of things go on we don't read about. So we are prepared, but we need more money invested in modern equipment and manpower, whatever, you know, every level.
Sean, good to have you back from Barbados. I'm going to finish with you at 8:26 because I think I can go to Francis Tewser, who's called in. Now, Francis, of course, is editor of Defence Analysis, a respected person and a respected organ within Defence Matters, a respected publication. Francis, thanks for coming on. I think you were listening. What do you take from what you heard from the Defence Secretary? Morning, Francis.
Morning, Nick. I was flabbergasted. Absolutely flabbergasted. The fact that, I'm sorry, you don't need to have to be able to recite in reverse order the names of every ship. But quite frankly, being able to say we have X available, if you can't do that, that is shocking. We don't have 17 frigates and destroyers.
We don't?
No. Ships do have to go into maintenance. So do aircraft. So do tanks. But we've got a perfect storm of a very old class of frigate, 523s. They are falling off a cliff with maintenance problems. So if you were to add up all of the ships we could generate over time, it might be 11. But at the moment, you have two Type 45 destroyers available and probably three Type 23 frigates.
Good God. Now, just to put this in context, you've been in this particular trade for more than 20 years. You were RUSI, you've covered Middle East defence, European defence topics, and now you're a freelancer in this area, but as I said earlier, you're well known. What's happened here? Is this incompetence or inheritance, as I asked Trevor Cowan? An inheritance that the government have had from 14 years of Conservative-led administration, or is it, sadly, incompetence in a man who's not across his brief? Francis Tewser.
It goes back to the previous Labour government as well. Classes of ships not ordered, delayed, deferred, cost of maintenance cut, so the ships just weren't being maintained properly. It is, sadly, a perfect storm, but it isn't being, at the moment, that well managed, as in the short term. And there is only one solution, which is injection of cash. Give and if you're not doing it, then you will continue with the situation where Type 93 frigates are retiring early. And do you know what, Nick? By the end of the decade, we could be down to 8 or 9 frigate and destroyers total.
Lastly, Francis, you'll know this. So there's an operation taking place in the Atlantic Ocean and the Baltic Sea next month. The UK will be in command, but we'll be doing it, as I said earlier, from a German warship. How much advance notice of an operation such as that would the military, would the MOD have had?
Oh, NATO exercises depends between, some of them are annuals. You just know that every March there is this anti-submarine warfare exercise. Some of the large ones, 2 to 5 years' notice.
Right, he got his numbers wrong on that. Francis, thank you. Francis Tooze is a defence journalist for more than 20 years. He was with RUSI. He's covered both Middle East defence and European defence topics. And he called in having listened to that interview. Thank you very much for that. All right, we might return to more calls on that, but we will. I promise you'll be looking at other stories, including...
It's been described as one of the largest mass evictions by a private landlord. Residents handed Section 21s before a ban on no-fault evictions comes in from May. I'm LBC's Henry Riley in Collier's Wood.
Plus that Meta addiction story. Meta and YouTube found liable in a landmark court verdict for harm caused to a woman who became addicted to their platforms. But is it actually their fault, that addiction? If someone chooses to spend hour after hour after hour looking at YouTube or whatever it might be, Instagram or whatever it is on social media, is it actually a personal responsibility or is it down to the company? And talking about responsibility, irresponsible suggestion that Hugh Edwards might try a comeback. If you haven't seen that very powerful docudrama, we'll take you back to some of that and ask, do you want to see the disgraced sex offender who read the news that's on the BBC back on the box? I know I don't. It's 8:30, you're listening to Breakfast with me, Nick Ferrari on LBC. The news, Dominic Ellis.
The Defence Secretary has told LBC that he's not happy with the number of Royal Navy warships available for immediate deployment. John Healey has confirmed, while speaking to Nick, that the UK is being forced to borrow a German ship to lead a NATO operation in the Atlantic and Baltic next month. Two men arrested in connection with an arson attack on 4 ambulances in North London have been released on bail. The vehicles belonging to a Jewish community group were set alight in Golders Green on Monday. And Sir Keir Starmer is promising to increase online protections for young people following a landmark ruling in the US. A jury in LA found that the tech firms Meta and Google were responsible for a woman's addiction to social media. LBC weather, a settled and dry day for much of the UK. Some patchy rain in the northwest, a high of 11 degrees.
Tom Swarbrick on LBC.
I suspect there might be a lot of other people who bring forward claims of not dissimilar nature to try and show, too, that these social media sites, the manner in which they are delivered to you, inspires a behaviour that could lead to some very, very disastrous consequences for you. The door is now open to a court deciding that, yes, in this 20-year-old woman's case, was true. The use of social media early made her addicted and her depression worse.
Tom Swarbrick, Monday to Friday from 4 p.m. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
Your life's already digital, from banking and shopping to streaming and learning. So why does sorting government stuff still feel like such hard work? The government is introducing a new digital ID to make access to services quicker and more secure for everyone. But we need to hear from you. Your voice matters. Search Digital ID Consultation to have your say. Digital ID, making public services work for you.
You know what you're getting with a wedding? Wedding hats. A baby in a waistcoat crying throughout the vows. Themed tables. Awkward best man speech. The plus one.
Hello.
People dancing in a circle. Ruined rental suit. Sometimes in life you just know what you're getting. Like a luxury bed and a great night's sleep. You know what you're getting with Premier Inn.
Aye, I'm looking for a pair of jeans.
Right. Low, slung, slouchy, wide leg, bower leg, curved leg, flared, straight or skinny.
Blue?
Fashion. It's hard to keep on top of. Other things, like the upcoming changes to renting, are a bit easier. If you are a landlord and you have existing tenants, you must send them a copy of the government's information sheet by the 31st of May. Or risk a fine. Find out more at gov.uk/renting-is-changing.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 606 0973.
Let's move to other matters. We may well return to the fact that we were feared to be fairly defenceless after that conversation with the Defence Secretary, but we go to the world of rentals, and one of the largest mass evictions by a private landlord in history is currently taking place, according to a senior Labour MP. Dame Siobhan McDonough, who represents Mitcham and Morden, has warned that property companies are rushing to remove tenants before a ban on no-fault evictions comes into force on the 1st of May. We've talked a lot about that, of course. If you are a landlord, a lot of you are getting out of the business. You're getting your property back and you're just selling it. And, of course, if you're a tenant, well, as we've heard from one of our fuel trackers, you're suddenly told, my mate Mohammed up north, you're suddenly told you haven't got a home anymore. Now, one of the companies in the spotlight, the story we're about to tell you, is Criterion Capital. Now, this is run by billionaire Asif Aziz, who owns the 19-storey Britannia Point apartment block in southwest London. Dame Siobhan has raised the question, raised the issue at Prime Minister's Questions, and now the Housing Secretary is looking into the allegations. LBC's Henry Riley went with the local MP to meet some of the affected tenants.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Silently and in semi-secrecy, London and the southeast of England are experiencing the largest mass eviction by a private landlord in decades. Hold Criterion Capital to account.
I condemn any unfair evictions, and I'll make sure the Housing Minister looks at the case.
More than 100 tenants privately renting in homes owned by one of London's biggest landlords tell us they've been given as little as 2 months before a Section 21 eviction comes into force.
My name is Andreas. I've been here for about 2.5 years.
I'm Alessio Ambrosi. I've lived at Britannia Point since 2022.
Criterion Capital, who have several billion pounds worth of property from apartments, hotels, there's the Trocadero site in Piccadilly Circus, they're accused of rushing through no-fault evictions before the practice is banned from the 1st of May.
Angry, I was shocked. You can do better. You're making this city worse.
Was the greed all worth it? Like just kicking people out instead of just keeping us for a few months.
Alessio and Andreas live at Britannia Point in Colliers Wood, owned by Criterion Capital, and tell me they don't know where to turn next.
Being evicted for no reason, it was very, very, very sudden. It's been kind of hard to arrange things. I'm afraid because they have a big legal team and I'm just some random person living in a flat.
Mine's a fixed term contract, so why am I affected? I'm probably going to be forced to, like, stay past that eviction date because I have no other choice, because it's either that or I'm jeopardising my job.
The long-standing local MP, Dame Siobhan McDonough, who raised the issue in Parliament, has again come to visit residents.
These tenants, they've paid their rent, they've looked after their flats, they've gone out to work, they are not doing anything wrong, yet Criterion Capital are using this opportunity for a no-fault eviction. That's a pretty terrifying experience.
Criterion Capital insists the timing is not due to an impending ban on Section 21 evictions. Dame Siobhan, who represents Mitcham and Morden for Labour, though, is sceptical.
Why evict them now? You have to come to some conclusion that the reason why it's now is because Section 21 notices can no longer be done from the 1st of May.
The billionaire owner, Asif Aziz, has previously donated £50,000 to the Labour Party through his company, as well as a much smaller £5,000 donation to the Conservatives. Siobhan McDonough says it's a scandal.
We can talk about Britannia Point, but there are blocks in Croydon, in Sutton, in Harlow, all around London and the South East. This could be hundreds and hundreds of people.
Henry Riley reporting. Now, Criterion Capital disputes the characterisation of a mass eviction and told LBC a limited number of statutory notices were lawfully served in respect of periodic tenancies. Only a small proportion of tenants across the portfolio, fewer than 5%, have been served notice. No fixed-term tenancy has been terminated prematurely. That's Criterion Capital. Now, if you have been affected, as I said earlier, we talked about this, I think it was last week, certainly it's been recently, because that legislation is coming in a few weeks' time. It is seen by those who are landlords as being pretty punitive, and a number of them are effectively getting out of the business. They're getting the tenants out, and they're putting the properties on the market. So obviously it's a law of supply and demand. That means that if you are a renter or you are in a rental property, you are a tenant, there's going to be fewer properties for you to possibly rent, so the prices will go up. It really does seem a perfect storm, which is a technical problem on both sides, both landlords and tenants alike. We might come to that perfect storm, but there seems to be a perfect storm engaging with our defence policies at the moment. a lot of you reacting to that interview I had with the Defence Secretary a little over an hour ago, I'm there now. Tracy in Bedfordshire, my father was a Marine Engineer in the Royal Navy. He went on to be a Royal Naval Commando working on Lord Lovat's team that planned D-Day. He went in first. Then he went to Iraq as a senior engineer who did the oil fields, and they all moved to the coast and they all to Europe. Then he did North Sea oil. And a matter of the North Sea oil, it's all the rigs at the time. He'd be horrified now. I think he would. He's not alone. Thank you for that. This comes in from Jack in Herne Bay. If we had a ship for every time a question was avoided by that man, the country would be great again. Simon Duff says, if this is the depth of knowledge and speed of thinking of our ministers, then we are in real trouble. Let's do one last one before we come back to the calls. This comes in from Lee Phillips. How embarrassing. A defence minister can't answer a simple question about the readiness of our fleet. Richard in Woodford Green, been hanging on the line. Richard, you're on the radio. What do you want to tell me? Good morning.
Morning, Nick. Pleasure as always.
Thank you for coming on.
Have we redefined the word incredulity? I think that's how you say it.
I'll say it that way, certainly, yes.
if you look in a dictionary at the moment, does it say present government?
Tell me what you're getting at. I sense I know where you're going with this. Tell me what you're getting at.
We're borrowing a ship from Germany to do it.
Yep.
Germany probably has, and I'm guessing here, someone can correct me, but maybe only an eighth of its coastline is attached to the sea. We're an island.
We are.
And they have more ships than us?
Well, certainly they have more ships that are ready than us.
But I think someone may have said earlier they had more ships. I haven't looked that up anyway, you know, haven't looked it
but
up.
This is what you get, and let's remember what Francis Chaucer told us, who's had 20 years in this. All governments, not just the Conservatives, this is what you get if you live off this peace dividend and you don't invest in defence. Isn't that the reality here, Richard?
Absolutely, 100%. I mean, you know, how many people are going to think, should I actually be living here? Is it safe?
Well, I think in the unlikely event that they play that interview in the Kremlin, I doubt it's going to have Putin absolutely shaking with fear.
and another thing, I mean, you know, listen, I totally understand why that they want to, board ships with oil and everything like that. But, I mean, are we in a position to do that?
Well, I was going to say, let's ask the defence, but I don't think there's much point asking the defence secretary. It is just words, Richard. And I think they've rushed this through because the Prime Minister's over at this summit, as it were. It's called JEF, Joint Expeditionary Forces Summit in Helsinki. They want to be saying the right things, but whether they will actually... And I mean, I didn't even get into him what would happen if the Russians started fighting back, because I don't know if he'd know. Richard, thank you. We might come back to that. But let's talk about this new laws that are coming in as regards rental property and what it means for both landlords and for tenants. And it doesn't work for either, it would appear. Mary's in Hounslow. How have you been affected, or how will you be affected by this, Mary? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Thank you for having me on. Well, we've been landlords, me and my husband, for years, over 10 years, and we've always tried to take on tenants who get universal credit and help them. Mm. And some of them are really good, but some of them, when they get really bad and you try and evict them, they don't pay the rent, they don't allow you to look after the property. We had one tenant staying in there for over a year and a half, not paying rent. We had to suffer with the mortgage not being paid, and we don't get help. This is all the Labour's fault. They're not helping the tenants or the landlords.
But was
they
it
just you, caused
you,
the
you,
mess.
You say it was Labour's fault, but I mean, they've not been in 2 years yet. Was it easier to evict tenants under the previous Conservative administration then, Mary?
No, but making landlords scared, not being able to keep them on by creating this periodic tenancy is very silly. Imagine having a tenant come on and after 2 months they'll say, no, I'm leaving you. Where is the stability? No landlord is going to trust any tenant from now unless they do really rigorous checks on them. How is that fair for the tenants?
What's the worst case you've had as a landlord? How much rent did they not pay and possibly leave the property in a bad state, Mary?
Well, a year and a half of not paying rent, and then we went in, the place was completely destroyed, we had to deal with that, and we don't know where she went. It's ridiculous.
How many properties do you have?
We have over 30 properties, and I have to say, most of the tenants, a lot of them you receive universal credit, they're amazing, but some of them who are really bad, where is the help? And they give a bad name for tenants.
And what will the impact, do you think, be in May when this new legislation comes in?
Well, we have to pick our tenants really carefully, and I'm afraid universal credit tenants are going to be looked at in a very bad way, because how can they pay if the government doesn't pay them their rent? how can they pay? And they have no backbone. It's not fair. A lot of people are going to go homeless because of this, because of the Labour government.
The government lastly say this is necessary for the protection of tenants and their tenancies. As a landlord, Mary, how do you react to that?
They have not protected them. If they want to protect them, then they need to go in and allow landlords to go into negotiation with tenants and then allow the tenants to speak to the landlords, not cause all this eviction and give tenants more rights, landlords no rights. They're the ones who have the properties. You know, if they're not happy, they're not going to let any tenants in.
Mary, thank you. David in Whitchurch, same subject. David, what's your take on this legislation next? May 1st. Morning.
Hi, morning, Nick. Thank you for taking the time.
Not at all.
I just wanted to provide sort of a bit of an... I used to be an estate agent in central London.
Okay.
Until recently. We've known about this bill for a very long time, both through Conservative and Labour governments. And throughout that whole process, the government have been made aware from the entire industry that this is going to have a negative effect on tenants, more so than anyone else, even though it's deigned to protect them. They knew this was going to happen. I don't think it's fair that they all of a sudden start, you know, shouting about it, saying this is not right, when they've been made aware throughout the whole process. For example, most landlords, are relatively nice people. They don't do it as a business. They just so happen to inherit a home and they want to keep it because it's from the family, so they're going to rent it out at reasonable prices. It's the big corporations that are going to be doing these large no-fault evictions. My question really is, why are the government complaining about it now, and why can't they just answer the question as to why they didn't listen?
Just lastly, expand a little bit. You said the people who are going to be affected most are the tenants. Just expand on that a bit lastly, David.
Because, particularly in London and, you know, the larger cities, the large corporations who own multiple properties, they are going to see this as a problem in terms of the bureaucratic element. So what are they going to do? They've got shareholders. Their job is to make a profit, as simple as that's all they are there to do. So what they will do is just increase the rent by getting rid of the tenants who, before this comes in, as we're seeing right now, and then get new tenants in at a higher rent, because throughout the reform bill, I don't know if it's been made mention, but they also can only increase the rent once a year in line with market rent. However, market rent is going to be decided by the same landlords. So all they have to do is kick the tenants out, put the rent up another 25%. And if they don't quite achieve it at first, they're happy to let it sit empty for a couple of months. At the end of the day, people need a place to live.
Of course, of course. David, thank you. Someone who's a professional in the property world. We will continue that conversation coming up in the next hour.
Could more legal cases be on the way for Google and Meta? They've both been found liable for a woman's social media addiction in a landmark lawsuit that says they made their platforms addictive. I'm LBC's technology correspondent Will Guyatt, and I'll be talking to Nick later in the show.
But is it Meta's fault if you become addicted to one of their platforms? Don't you bear any personal responsibility? And someone who has zero personal responsibility...
Famous, you know? Living the dream.
Oh, is that so? Because you know me so well.
Whoa, why are you being like this? I'm only messing around with you.
Let's get one thing straight. Unlike you, everything I have, I've earned.
That's a scene from Power, and it was powerful. Power, the downfall of Hugh Edwards. I would suggest a career-defining portrayal of Edwards by Martin Clunes. The suggestion he, Edwards, wants to make some kind of comeback. Would you want to see him on the box? 8:46, LBC News headlines, Dominic Ellis.
Speaking to Nick, the Defence Secretary has confirmed that the UK will have to borrow a German warship to lead a NATO operation next month. Two men arrested in connection with an arson attack in North London have been released on bail. And Sir Keir Starmer is promising to increase online protections for young people following a landmark ruling in the United States. LBC weather, a settled and dry day for much of the UK. Some patchy rain in the northwest later, a high of 11 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Long delays on the M25 going clockwise from junction 14 at Heathrow to 16 at the M40. And that was after an accident that happened earlier. And then there are delays anti-clockwise to the Dartford Tunnel because of an accident. It's slow from junction 2 at the A2. The Rotherhithe Tunnel and the Limehouse Link Tunnels both stay closed. It's because of an ongoing technical problem and there are severe delays on all the surrounding routes. Also, the delays continue on the A1 southbound to Highgate Station, and that was after an accident that happened earlier. And on the Underground, there are minor delays on the Bakerloo line, and that's because of an ongoing shortage of trains.
This is LBC.
Indeed presents hires you can't afford to get wrong, like warehouse operations manager.
Where are the forklifts?
I sold them. They were too expensive. I got a great deal on these scooters, though.
You expect us to move a 2-ton pallet on a scooter?
It'll be fun. Just think of the core strength you'll build.
This is a job for sponsored jobs.
This is what happens when you don't sponsor your job on Indeed. So the next time you need someone to get the job done right, get matched with quality candidates with an Indeed sponsored job. Visit Indeed.com/next hire and sponsor your job today.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060 973 LBC.
My name's Mark and this is my NHS story. The sensation in my neck was painful all the time. Once I spoke to my GP, they referred me to my CDC. They got me in very, very quickly. The amount of pain I went through for something so easy, why hadn't I done this 4 months before?
The government is opening new community diagnostic centres, with many already available 12 hours a day, 7 days a week, so the NHS can be there for all of us when we need it. Find your closest one at gov.uk/NHS Fit for the Future. Available England-wide.
What's the best present you ever got for your birthday? I bet it wasn't as life-changing as £1 million. Every week with the birthday draw, there's £1 million to be won. And you can enter from as little as £1, or via post. Enter by midnight on Sunday, and your special day could win you £1 million. Visit thebirthdaydraw.com. Is it your lucky day? From Global and ITV. 18 plus, UK only, no purchase necessary.
At AJ Bell, we believe investing is for everyone, even people who know nothing about investing. Like Keith, who thought dividends were a boy band. Jessica, who thought compound interest was a prison dating app. And Sue, thought FTSE 100 was a bit of under-the-table fun, which surprised her accountant.
Oh, no.
If we can make investing feel good for them, it's no wonder which have recommended us 8 years running. AJ Bell, feel good investing. The value of your investments can go up or down.
This is 40-year-old Kathy, mother of two and self-confessed telly addict.
Ready? Oh, look at you. That's brilliant. Well done.
This is also Kathy, working as part of a team to keep things calm at her local prison.
Listen, speak to me.
And helping someone's son write his first letter home in 8 months.
Well done. You should be really proud.
Thank you, miss.
An extraordinary job done by someone like you. Search prison jobs now.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
10 minutes before nine. Let's talk a little bit more about this proposed legislation coming in as of May the 1st and your reaction. Colin says it's not surprising if some landlords are evicting tenants as with the Renters' Right Act coming in. It makes sense to evict risky tenants now as we're virtually impossible in the future. Risky tenants will find it more difficult to find accommodation. Rents will inevitably rise, and I am a landlord. Just a lot of you are saying, why worried all these people? They own all these properties. It's worth telling you that 65% of rental properties are owned by people who have three or fewer properties. And I always cite the typical example. Actually, it didn't happen to work in our case, but when I met my ex-wife, she had a place, I had a place. You live in one and you keep the other and you kind of see it as your pension. That actually didn't happen. Well, it didn't happen, not least because we divorced. But that didn't happen in our case. But in many instances, it actually does. And that's why it works. Someone who just wants to be identified as N. It's mad how a landlord can evict a tenant, but we're finding it impossible to get out of our tenancy agreement. We're locked into 3 years, can't now afford it. They won't allow us to be released from the tenancy. That's the rule. I'm sorry to hear that, N. Suzanne says, I have one property. Now, it's not all these giant corporations with these Rackman-like tactics. Suzanne says, I have one property. Unfortunately, my tenant has not been able to work due to illness. She now owes me £5,000. She's been in my flat for 9 years. My conscience, and I couldn't ask her to leave. I will sell my flat when she leaves, as it's not worth the hassle. If I try to evict her, it will take at least a year and £10,000, roughly, in legal fees. The government is making it more rule. Government is, I think you mean bringing in more rules, including having to register online to upload the rent you receive and any invoices every 3 months. Adam's in Poole. Adam, are you a tenant or a landlord? Good morning.
Landlord, Nick.
How's it going? How's business?
Well, it's not business. It's just, myself and my wife got a property that we rent out because when we met, we had properties each. So
there you go. Exactly the example I just said. Yeah.
And then rented one.
Yeah.
I think what your previous caller, one of your previous callers said about the new bill making it harder for landlords and tenants is absolutely true, in that we'll have to do more checks on those tenants to make sure that they meet the affordability criteria. Previously, and I think the councils have a part to play in this as well, mm-hmm. I had a tenant where she was a social tenant, and again, no problem with that whatsoever. The council paid me the rent for the first 6 months, mm-hmm. and then the tenant decided that she didn't want that to be the process, so called up the council. The council then paid her directly, and the tenant stopped paying us. And then there was no requirement for the council
to pay. Hang on. Did you say the tenant was a woman? Did you say it was she? Did you?
Yes.
Yeah. So she just pocketed the council's money and didn't pass it on to you?
Exactly.
Good Lord. Right.
And there's nothing which states that the councils have to pay the landlords. So if they were to solve that issue, I think we'd have a much bigger uptake on landlords supplying houses to social tenants. The risk wouldn't be there.
It is a risky business, isn't it, being a landlord? I am not one, but I imagine it is a risky business being a landlord.
It is, yeah, and you've got to, there's no trust, and you have to do that. Mm. But if you were backed up, for example, by the council on a social lease, then you'd have some peace of mind that at least you're going to get paid.
What are you going to do ultimately? Are you going to stick with it, or with this new legislation, would you consider selling it? What's the plan, Adam?
Well, I think at the moment, I don't think the new legislation would affect us too much in
right.
that
okay.
we would still, if we needed to evict a tenant, we would only do it for a valid reason anyway.
Mm.
So that reason, we would only do it if that reason existed.
Okay.
So I don't think the new legislation would affect us too much, but I can 100% see that if our tenant were to leave, for example, we've got to find a new tenant, we're going to have to do much more stringent checks.
But it's working with this tenant, right?
It's working with this tenant at the moment. It's absolutely fine. We've had Perfect. No issues whatsoever.
Perfect.
But previous tenants, not so much.
Good luck, Adam. The classic example, just as I finished saying, man meets girl, or man meets man, or girl meets, it doesn't matter. You have two properties between you. I tell you what, let's move into yours and we'll use the other one as a source of income, almost like a pension. Exactly as Adam spelled it out. Claire in Essex. Thanks, Adam. Best regards to your wife as well. Claire in Essex. I used to live in London in a one-bed flat when I got married and bought a house in Essex in preparation for a family. We rented the flat out with a plan we would sell it within a year. This never happened due to the cladding scandal. Roll on 7 years. The cladding is still not replaced. Oh, my poor woman. I can't sell the flat, so I have to keep it rented to stay afloat. This latest news on legislation has me worried. Once again, no support from the government. Ricky's in Waltham Abbey. Ricky, your view on this. Good morning.
Good morning. How you doing?
Yeah, good. Thank you. Let's hear your story. Are you a landlord or a tenant?
So I'm actually a landlord. I've got about 18 properties that I've rent out, and I've been doing that so the past 25 years.
How's it changed over a quarter of a century?
I'll be honest. It's changed probably over the past couple of years, where it's been extremely difficult to get tenants out of your property. Anyway, I mean, the Section 21 where you was able to serve a formal notice and then they leave after 2 months, that doesn't actually work anymore. So I've had tenants where I've had to do a couple of evictions where they've been told to stay in the property until we take them to court, and it takes about a year to go through the whole process. And
right.
during this period, you know, you can be not receiving any rent at all until the bailiffs turn up and take them out of your property. So it's difficult anyway. With this new legislation coming in, I think it's going to make it even harder. Tenants can actually give you 2 months' notice and move out, so there'll be no fixed tenancy.
What's the longest case you've had, the worst case of non-payment and eviction, would you say?
So 12 months.
12 months. 12 months, no rent.
Yep, 12 months, no rent, go through the eviction process, pay the court fees, and then the tenants will leave once the bailiffs come, and then they go to the council and expect a house to be given to them, and it doesn't actually work like that anymore. So I think tenants need to be made aware of the situation. I think they think it's easy just to get a home from the council if they've been evicted. And I've got that same issue going through now. I've served the formal notice. The tenants moved in with the wife and baby. They shouldn't be there. Right. They think they're going to get a house from the council, but now I have to go through the whole court process of getting them evicted. So it's tough.
So you get 12 months with no rent, and then presumably another, 6 months before you evict them or something like that, is it? Or another 12 months?
Well, it's 12 months in total, up to 1 year for the whole process. But then once they vacate, you then got to spruce the property back up, put it back on the market, and hope that you're going to get a good tenant again.
Yeah, probably put in new carpet and paint and goodness knows what else. Thank you, Ricky. Good luck. Darren's in Braintree. Darren, your story on this. Good morning.
Morning, Nick. We've got a flat with tenants. We didn't put their rent up for 5 years.
Right.
And eventually we were actually paying for them to live there once we paid our insurances and paid the mortgage, obviously. And obviously we got taxed on that every year.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't want to put their rent up because they're decent tenants and they actually pay quite early on their rent, which is good. I've never really had a problem with them paying. The problem is, with the cost of living and the things are going up, if I put their rent up, they won't be able to afford it. So what do I do? I mean, if I put a rent up on someone who can't afford, and I've got to get them out, because I'm then paying for them to live there. Yeah, I don't know how this law works. I'm not really au fait on it. I haven't really looked up on it too much.
I think you might need to. I mean, are you going to keep the... What is your plan over the next 12 months?
Well, the plan originally was, as you say, this property is a pension.
Yeah, of course. You know, absolutely.
That's why they did it. Everybody did it. When I moved in with my wife, it was her original flat.
Yep.
It wasn't mine. I now look after it for her.
Yeah.
Because we had sort of agents who were looking after it that were fleecing us completely.
Right.
Not doing any work that needed doing. But, you know, as I say, it got to a point last year where we were £3,500 down last year on what we got back on the flat, because we did some improvements, put a new boiler in, and other stuff we needed. But, you know, it seems to me, it's a good law. I've got nothing against people. Everyone should have somewhere to live.
Of course, and they should have protection, but this is what's going to happen. Darren, I've got to go to the news. Thank you. Best wishes to you and your wife. I would suggest when you get time, you have a look at that legislation, perhaps make a decision where you want to go. Right, the music means we must move on. Coming up after the news, addicted to social media, but is it the company's fault? Plus, with the Prime Minister at a summit in Helsinki, the Defence Secretary was all at sea with some of my questions. How many frigates do we have in the fleet?
We have 17 frigates and destroyers.
Plus, Hugh Edwards returned to TV.
Famous, you know? Living the dream.
Oh, is that so? Because you know me so well.
Oh, why are you being like this? I'm only messing around with you.
Let's get one thing straight. Unlike you, everything I have, I've earned.
That's from that Channel 5 show. We'll have more on that after the 9 o'clock news on LBC.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 9 o'clock, the Defence Secretary has been accused of a shocking failure to explain how many warships the UK has available. John Healy was asked by Nick this morning how many are currently in service.
We have 17 frigates and destroyers. It's down from 23 at the end of the last Labour government. And as I say, the number of mine hunters have been cut by more than a half.
The defence analyst Francis Tulsa was listening to Mr. Healy's interview on LBC this morning. Speaking to Nick, he questioned the numbers given by the defence secretary.
We've got a perfect storm of a very old class of frigate, 523. They are falling off a cliff with maintenance problems. If you were to add up all of the ships we could generate over time, it might be 11. But at the moment, you have two Type 45 destroyers available and probably three Type 23 frigates.
John Healy has insisted he's not happy with the number of Royal Navy warships available for immediate deployment. Mr. Healy's also confirmed that the UK is being forced to borrow a German warship to lead a NATO operation in April. The government has promised to spend £300 million on shipbuilding this year. In other news this morning, President Trump has renewed his threat towards Iran, warning of hell if the country doesn't accept defeat. Tehran's foreign ministry has denied that peace talks are even taking place. Two men arrested in connection with an arson attack in North London have been released on bail. Four ambulances belonging to a Jewish community group were set alight in Golders Green on Monday. Britain's biggest police force says it'll resume arresting protesters for holding signs in support of the banned group Palestine Action. The Metropolitan Police paused doing so last month after the High Court ruled that the government ban was unlawful. But the Met says the arrests will now restart, as an appeal against the ruling is likely to take several months. And the Prime Minister is promising to increase online protections for young people in the UK following a landmark ruling in the United States. A jury in Los Angeles has found that the tech firms Meta and Google were responsible for a woman's addiction to social media. In the city a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading down 82 at 10,023. The pound buys $1.33 and €1.15. LBC weather, a settled and dry day for much of the UK. Some patchy rain will develop in the northwest later. A high of 11 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Some people still don't know that you can collect Nectar points at Esso.
So, not at the top of this mountain?
No, at Esso.
Not in this cave?
No, at Esso! Not on top of a mountain or in a cave. The Nectar points are at Esso, every time you fill.
Can I find them on my spiritual plane?
No, definitely not there. Esso, where the nectar's at. See esso.co.uk for details.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Good morning, 4 minutes after nine, Thursday, March the 26th. You're going to have to face it. You're addicted to social media, Meta facing an avalanche of claims after that court ruling. But is it fair to blame your addiction on them? Is there no degree of personal responsibility? In other news, someone who showed no personal responsibility is disgraced sex offender, former BBC newsreader Hugh Edwards, that powerful Channel 5 docudrama, whatever they call it. Many people are asking, with the level of his crimes, why isn't Hugh Edwards in jail, as opposed to reportedly thinking of a comeback? And we'll go back to that excruciating interview. The Prime Minister may be in Helsinki, but his Defence Secretary back here in the UK was all at sea when asked about the number of Royal Naval frigates and vessels we actually have.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
To Los Angeles, where a jury has handed down an unprecedented win for a young woman who sued Meta and YouTube over her childhood addiction to social media. Jurors found that Meta, which to remind you owns Instagram, Facebook and WhatsApp, and Google, owner of YouTube, intentionally built addictive social media platforms that harmed the 20-year-old mental health. She's known as Kaylee, and she's awarded $3 million, which converts to around just over £2.2 million, in a result that could have implications for hundreds of other cases working their way through the US courts. Enough from me. Let's go to Will Guyatt, who, of course, is LBC's technology correspondent. Well, this probably will have hit you last night when the news came in. A, how do you respond? B, what happens to these other cases? Will, morning to you.
Yeah, morning, Nick. Seismic is a word that's very overused, but this is quite seismic in many ways. We're in a situation now where the social networks are proven by this court case to have been intentionally creating products that keep people on them. Until this point, the defence has been, as you all know, there's nothing to do with us, Governor. We just make the platforms. The content is addictive. That has now been absolutely skewered, and they will not be able to rely on that. And they've relied on that for years, decades. In particular cases. So we're now in a situation where we have a court case which has been decided, and there are hundreds backed up in that one court alone in California. And we're going to see more and more of these cases coming through. So there are cracks now in the armour. And I think there will be all sorts of opportunities and campaigners and people with tragic stories and cases who are feeling rightly vindicated by this news. And they're going to go after the social networks. And there's more than a bit of big tobacco about this case. You remember the tobacco cases where they denied smoking was going to hurt you or harm you, and knowingly hid the information. If we take the evidence in this court case to hand, Zuckerberg and others were told about the dangers of some of these new features they were adding, but people were told to proceed because they wanted people to stay using the platforms, and a thing called dwell time was a phrase that fascinated Zuckerberg back in 2015. We need to increase the dwell time on the platform. In short, I don't care what you do, get people spending more time on our platform so we can sell them more advertising. And that is exactly what happened. So fairly damning evidence against senior leaders of social networks who were warned of concerns and were told the people doing the jobs for them to go ahead and keep working on it. So the tobacco cases took 40-odd years, Nick, to get to a case where they were paying out the hundreds of billions of dollars. But this is the start of something, because it would appear, based on this, that the social networks knew something. Final factor I want to bring to you. I don't know what Donald Trump is going to do about this, because previously, Donald Trump has been very pro-tech companies and very pro the idea that the US would sort out its own problems and issues with social networks. Given this is happening on his own lawn, and he's got a lot of other things going on, is he going to say, no, they get a pass for this if they do certain things to change and improve the service? Or does he go down the route of letting governments all around the world and court cases all around the world sue these companies for billions of dollars and potentially sue them out of existence?
The court was told that in one instance, Kaylee, the woman as identified, her longest single day of use of a platform stretched to 16 hours, 16 of 24. How do they, in layman's terms, Will, how do they do it? What do they build in that hooks people such as Kaylee?
So one of the things they've got, Nick, do you remember in the old days you'd read a newspaper page and you'd finish it and you'd finish, when you finish the newspaper, there's no more newspaper to read.
Yes.
Imagine if I designed a newspaper that you could never finish reading. Might be heaven.
I love
in
this
your
man.
Case.
He's talking my language. I love Will. On you go, Will, with your green
so
glasses.
So you can keep reading it. It will never stop. It's called an infinite scroll, which means that they will keep showing you content as long as you are on the platform. So there is no end. You do not complete it. Some of the other features that were there, Nick, were the auto-playing video. You finish a video, another video comes up. I routinely find myself in the middle of the night when I'm not listening to Clive Bull. I'll find myself going through, the feed, and it just keeps running. And you can sit there for an hour and a half, 2 hours right. In these situations. And the videos are just going past you. And am I engaging with them? No. But the tech company can say, this Will Geyer is here all this time. Look at how many adverts you could sell him.
Right.
And that is one of the things that comes here. But should this be allowed for adults? Should they be allowed to make these platforms intentionally sticky? You tried to make your headlines punchy on the front of the newspapers when you were there,
yeah.
Or should people be more protected?
Fantastic. Such a good analogy. Look after yourself, Will Guy, LBC's technology correspondent. Now, let's bring into the conversation Ellen Room. Ellen is an online safety campaigner. Keen-eared listeners will recall. I spoke with Ellen, I think, at the start of the month as part of our online safety. Sadly, she lost her teenage son to a so-called online challenge a couple of years ago. Good to have you on. Thanks very much, Ellen. Firstly, obviously, what do you take from the ruling and what implications might it have for your case against TikTok? Morning to you.
Morning. Thank you. Yes, it's fantastic news. I mean, it's a landmark case. The whole world is looking at this case to see what would happen. And they ruled yes on all the points raised to the jurors. And I think it's massive. It's going to open the floodgates for other cases. I've obviously got a case going through in Delaware for TikTok. It'd be interesting to see. Hopefully we can continue with that. We're waiting for a motion to dismiss verdict answer to be able to proceed, and then we'll see what we do with TikTok. But it's fantastic news.
You were in the House of Lords last night, if I've got my facts right. Why and what was achieved and what did you learn, Ellen?
Yes, I was. I was there with six other bereaved parents and various other people. But we, once again, it was successful in the House of Lords. So they have agreed to raise the age to 16 on social media. We now have to go back to this ridiculous stage of going back ping pong stage with the House of Commons. We need now the Labour MPs to step up and vote in favour of raising the age. We have proved with these cases in America and time again how much harmful material our children are being seeing online and being fed through the algorithms. We need to change this. We need the government to step up and make differences.
Down in Australia, it's almost, Ellen, like a sort of real-time experiment, if you will. What are you learning from that? How would you rate the progress or otherwise?
I think anything we do is going to be positive. Yes, I understand that some people in Australia are slipping through the net and some children on our platform, but it's a learning curve and it may not be perfect at the moment, but we're going to stop majority of children accessing harmful data. And I think as we develop and as technology, well, the technology companies need to step up and make sure who's on their platform, what age and what they're seeing. It's got to be their responsibility, but it's a starting point. We absolutely need to get these kids, you know, off a platform that's so dangerous.
We're talking in this instance, Ellen, about a fine, a little north of £2 million. is it, as my colleague Will was saying, is this like big tobacco? Is it going to take fine after fine, multi-million pound or dollar fine after fine? Is that the way to get this action brought about?
Yes, I do think so. This case is waiting in the wings. There's so many parents, and I've met a lot of them, particularly out in America as well as the UK. But there's so many cases that now opens the door, and it sets precedence for these other cases. So, yes, technology companies will be, you know, wondering what happens next, but they need to be worried and they need to step up and make changes.
Finally, the last time we spoke, we were talking about the Attorney General's office. Do you remember, regarding your application, there has been movement on that. Just remind the listeners what's happened.
So, yes, I had applied to the Attorney General to redo my son's inquest so I can use something called the Data Use and Access Act to be able to obtain Jules' social media data. You at LBC contacted Attorney General, thank you very much, and they have granted permission. So I now have to apply to the High Court to redo his inquest. And at that point, hopefully, I can obtain whatever social media data there is about my son and find out why my 14-year-old child is not alive.
And lastly, what do you think, if I may use this expression, what do you think the smoking gun, the significance of some of that information could be, Ellen?
Well, if I can prove it to social media companies, I will be holding them accountable. We cannot have children being harmed on these platforms. I just want to be told what happened to my child. And the fact that they refuse to give it to me, you can't help but wonder, what are they hiding? Why would they not hand it over to me and say, hope you get the answers?
Ellen, I always enjoy speaking with you. Sadly, of course, for all the wrong reasons. But Ellen Room is an online safety campaigner. She lost her 14-year-old son, Jules, back in 2022 for a so-called online challenge. Who is responsible, though? I mean, in the view of the Los Angeles court, they've completely decided. But is it fair? Michael's in Southend. What do you say, Michael? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. I think Qantas sort of lies 90% with the social media companies.
Right.
I'll give you an analogy. Imagine a food company sticking some sort of hidden drug into the food to make you addicted to keep buying that food. There'd be absolute uproar, wouldn't there?
It would be your decision to keep buying that food. Let's say I open a hamburger chain and I put something magical in my cheeseburgers. Right. You decided to keep buying my cheeseburger.
Because I'm addicted to it.
But is that not your not problem? That is your responsibility. I mean, unless I'm lacing my cheeseburgers with, I don't know, heroin, or I'm not very good on drugs, or cocaine, I don't know, some bloody drug, or weed, but it's a personal decision. I've just got this great mix, and I put an extra bit of, I don't know, oregano or something, and then you're just, why is it my problem?
Well, say this, okay, I'll do it with heroin. You've got
that's an illegal substance, obviously.
We're talking principles here, okay?
I'm putting Worcester sauce and oregano in my cheeseburgers, and you...
Well, that's not going to make anyone addicted.
Well, it is. You haven't toasted my cheeseburger.
social media...
It's award-winning. Sorry, go on.
We know that it's doing damage to people, yet, I mean...
But is there no... lastly, Michael, is there no personal responsibility here?
There is personal responsibility. There's personal responsibility with everything. But there are things out there that are just not good. And that has now been proved to not be good, not just because of this one court case.
No.
We just know that social media has put pressures on people. YouTube is not terrible, but it's a really good time waster.
Michael, I will leave it there. Thanks again. You started more calls on this. Plus, coming up later in the show, all at sea, the Defence Secretary didn't know how many naval vessels we actually have. 16 minutes after 9, news headlines on LBC. Dominic Ellis.
Speaking to Nick, the Defence Secretary has confirmed that the UK will have to borrow a German warship to lead a NATO operation next month. Two men arrested in connection with an arson attack in North London have been released on bail. And Sir Keir Starmer is promising to increase online protections for young people following a landmark ruling in the United States. LBC weather, a settled and dry day for much of the UK. Some patchy rain in the northwest later, a high of 11 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Severe delays continue in East London with the Rotherhithe Tunnel being closed and also the Limehouse Link Tunnels closed as well, both ways. It's causing huge delays, especially on the West India Dock Road, the A13, where it's slow back to the Canning Town flyover. Routes around Canary Wharf also hardly moving at all, and also through Bermondsey and also around Mile End. So the whole area is extremely congested. Also, the A130 remains closed northbound at the Rettenham Turnpike after an accident, and that's also causing lengthy delays. On the trains, southeastern services are currently at a standstill northbound between Sevenoaks and Orpington, and C2C services are delayed at Fenchurch Street.
This is LBC.
Did you know that Tesco does home insurance? And you can get club card prices on the house. What? You didn't know? Shut the front door. Over 500,000 people already have Tesco home insurance. And it was awarded which recommended provider for home insurance in September 2025. See how much you can save with your club card. Search online for Tesco Home Insurance. Every little helps.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060 973. LBC.
It's not easy being a clamp stuck on the wheel of the one person on the street who didn't tax their car. Yeah, Graham at number 7, I'm talking about you. Bet the neighbourhood group chat is as well. Wish I had a group chat. Maybe I can chat to myself.
Hi, Clampy, how's it going?
Not great, Clampy. Being clamped to the only N-Tax car for miles is so lonely.
Over 98% of drivers tax their vehicle on time. Tax it, don't risk it. Visit gov.uk/DVLA/taxit.
At Kia, we know that inspiration begins with a first. Your first job, your first love, your first home. Now it's time for your first drive in the new Kia EV2 at our first drive weekends. It's your chance to be one of the first to test drive the Kia EV2 with its innovative technology and elegant eye-catching design. It's small in size, but big in personality. Discover what driving electric really means. Search Kia First Drive Weekends to reserve your place today.
Kia, movement that inspires.
If you owned a diesel Nissan, Renault, Jaguar or Land Rover built between 2009 and 2020, you could be entitled to compensation. Checking takes minutes at jointheclaim.com, and if successful, compensation could be worth thousands. Don't miss out. You could be among the millions of drivers across the UK bringing diesel emissions claims. Check now at jointheclaim.com.
Join the claim!
Eligibility criteria apply and any compensation may vary.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
Right, let's get into the idea of social media addiction. In the view of the Los Angeles court, they companies are guilty. $3 million, £2.2 million worth of guilt. Dee's in Croydon. Dee, your reaction. Good morning.
Good morning. Hi, it's lovely to be with you here.
Good to have you on.
So, I would like to say that I'm a social media influencer, and I have millions of views on all of my videos on TikTok, Instagram, lots of things, and I use comedy as a means to share a message, you know, and it's usually a message of compassion of some kind.
Right.
So, I've had an opposite experience where lots of people have approached me, including parents, saying to me, my child watches you and they have changed their behaviour to become a better person. So I think...
What,
you know,
is it that you do? You know, what is the main thrust of your messaging and your work?
Well, it's actually compassion. It's just a compassion. So I start with the little things in life, and I use comedy, sarcasm, things like that.
But can you give me an example, dear, little?
Yeah, recently I did a video, and it was just a sketch of a shopkeeper. I'm a shopkeeper, so it's, yeah. It's called Shopkeeper D, and I was a shopkeeper, and I was just serving a lady, and then she starts talking about something. There's a punchline. At the end of the message, there's a thing to say, she's trying to buy a poison, you know, I say, do not use mouse poison. And use humane live capture traps and release them far away. It's compassion in the world that needs it. You know, pick up a slug and move it off the pavement. Don't let someone step.
People don't get addicted to you, do they? Where they can't switch you.
Well, lots of people watch me. I had 3 million views on that one video and 10,000 comments of people saying, I'll never step on a slug, I'll never use a mouse poison, you know, I'll pick up an injured bird in the carpet. And lots of parents came to me, including parents of children who have been excluded from schools and homeschooled because of so-called being, you know, not...
We've talked before about this, haven't we? Did we talk about slugs or rats?
Talked about rats and slugs before, but this is on the social media context. Yeah, so, you know, I campaign for kindness to all creatures, you know,
not rats.
White vinegar. Well, everything is still alive. you know, and it's, and rats are a good food source for foxes, and if we look after the foxes, then they will look after the rats. We won't have to poison anything, you know.
Well,
it's adding
not good
compassion.
If you've got one in your kitchen.
No, so you can use humane live capture traps, buy them online, release them in the woods.
What's called a shovel.
They still feel pain, you know, and they're very intelligent, so it's good karma.
They
remember karma.
Sorry? They carry disease.
That, well, you know, there's a lot of misunderstanding about the whole plague. It's humans that were dirty, and then we had bad drainage, and these rats were carrying the dirt from us. So, as usual, animals get the blame for us. So, you know, right. If we're cleaner, they were... And they do provide a good... You know, rats are used at the moment
right,
in rubble.
We're getting on. Lastly, just a view. So, can you be... if you are addicted to social media, whose fault is it? You or the company?
It's absolutely most of us. I'd say it is your own fault. If
that's what I was looking for. Dee, good luck with what you do. Thank you. Erin in Reading. Whose fault is it anyway? Whose fault is it, Erin? Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Not at all.
So I have recently quit social media because I found that it was affecting my attention span. It was affecting my mental health quite badly.
In what way was your mental health being affected?
Just the content that sometimes comes up. Almost sort of eggs you on and lets you think of things that you're feeling, you know, when you're feeling depressed or struggling with
an
eating disorder.
Can you give me an example?
Yeah, so like eating disorder content on social media is very, it's so extreme because they'll have code words they use to get around the algorithms, like safety mechanisms.
Right.
And, you know, show you content saying like, oh, but this is what it, you know, nothing tastes as good as skinny feels, and just showing you things that make you feel worse. And I wanted to talk about...
Do you have an eating disorder? Do you mind my asking?
I was diagnosed with one, yeah.
I see. Okay.
And I'm quite far into my recovery now, so
well
I feel
done.
A lot better about it. But
do you think the company's preyed on you in any way?
Absolutely. And I think also it's giving platforms to people who are sick, and, you know, people who also have eating disorders or who also struggle with self-harm, and putting that on a platform and allowing other people to sort of... you know, speak about it with each other when they're not in the healthiest place themselves.
What has the impact been, Erin? Do you feel emotionally healthier? Do you feel physically healthier now that you've switched off social media?
I've only done it very recently. I'd tried a few times before and I'd never been able to stick with it because I'd had, like, time limits and not fully deleted the apps and just told myself I'd go off them. But now, in the last couple of days, I've fully deleted all of them and I physically feel myself craving it. I know people say you can't get addicted to content, but it's not the videos themselves. It is the doom scrolling and it is the dopamine release of, oh, what's the next video going to be? And I find myself picking up my phone without even realizing it and going to search for the apps, and then they're not there because I've deleted them. And then I'm like, oh, what am I doing?
If I asked you, Erin, to break down the responsibility, is it 100% the social media company? Is it 50% them, 50% you? How would you give the percentages, Erin?
I think the majority of it would go to the social media companies because... Okay. They're using the science to find out what works to keep people addicted or keep people going back to their videos. You know, yes, you can blame yourself for, you know, downloading it in the first place, but if that's what everybody else is doing and they're designing it to trap you, how could that be our fault if they're literally using human nature against us?
Erin, thank you for that. Good luck with what you're doing there, and you're decided that you'll have your absence, effectively forced absence from social media. Feature some of the social media and texts that are coming in. Kieran says, please give Ellen, as in Ellen Room, the campaigner we spoke to about 20 minutes or so ago, please give her my best and thank her for the work she's doing to protect children like my 14-year-old boy. Paul says, the problem is you don't know you're addicted until you are addicted. David says, if companies are designing their social media platforms to be addictive, then of course the companies bear responsibility for any addiction. Alex is in Southampton. Alex, you're on the radio. Your point. Good morning.
Morning, Nick. Yeah, so my point really is the fact that no one really told us that these platforms were going to be as addictive as they are. These algorithms are so it keeps you going and going and going.
From personal experience?
Yeah,
100%. No, I tell you, because this is going to be a sensitive area, can we move? Thank you. If we can move Alex to another... I'm saying thank you, by the way, to my colleagues. I've gone mad. Voices in my ears. Let's try, because I want to hear Alex's story, and it's not appropriate if he's going to share personal situations that I can't really hear him. Try Graham in Warrington. Graham, whose fault is it? Good morning.
I'm with you. I think it's the user.
I think it's 50-50, possibly 50-50, but go on, expand your view, please do.
Yeah, I think it's the user, but to take it one step further, it's parents. If you're talking about children, I mean, I believe this girl, this woman was six when she first started.
Yes, Kaylee, as she was called. Yeah. Yes, I think you're right. Yep.
Facebook, you have to be 13. To have a Google account, you have to be 13. So surely it's parental responsibility.
Children have been defying their parents since time began, haven't they? That's the point.
Does that make the supplier at fault? I mean, it's like a 16-year-old getting drunk off lager and going driving a car and crashing it and then blaming the company for making the lager. It's That's illegal for them to do both, you know. So I really think that there should be more emphasis on parental responsibility to keep these youngsters off the things that are damaging them.
Thanks for that, Graham. Actually, she said Kaylee told the court she was 10 when she started having feelings of anxiety and depression disorders for which she would be diagnosed years later by a qualified therapist. So, yes, it probably was around 8 or 9 it started, and by 10 she's had all sorts of emotional problems. Graham, thanks. Now, Alex in Southampton, you were just saying did you say you were having some problems with social media, Alex?
Yeah, 100%. And I know a lot of my friends spend more than enough time on these social media apps, and the fact that we're to blame for the company's acts of planting these seeds of coercement to stay on the platform, I think, is a little bit disastrous. The idea of the analogy that it's like grabbing a lager is insulted because we know the ethics of alcohol.
Oh, nice.
When we were 10 to 12 years old, no one told us, yeah, if you start on these platforms, you're going to be spending hours of your life.
What has happened to you personally, if I can ask you, but obviously don't say if you don't want to go there?
No, I mean, for me personally, I've not had specific negative experiences.
Okay.
I know it's more so the time sink that it becomes, the lack of attention you get from dealing with them. I still consider myself a productive member of society,
mm-hmm.
but I know friends who aren't as much, and they've got severe anxiety. I know we heard from a girl who had eating disorders, and that is quite common among girls because of the content that's forwarded to them, Trudy.
Lastly, how much time a day or a week do you spend on social media, would you say?
It really depends on the day, but it can sometimes go up to about 4 hours on Instagram
alone.
4 hours
continuously in one hit?
Yeah.
Okay, the line's gone again, Alex. But you got your points across, I assure you, but I will leave it there because it's getting all clicky and bangy, for want of a better expression. Alex, thank you. David's in Putney. David, where would the percentages be for you? 50-50, 100% TikTok or Meta or Google's fault? Where would you put it? Good morning.
Morning, Nick. Thank you for talking to me. It's 100% the company's fault, in my opinion, based on the fact that I'm hearing a lot of false equivalences. We have to respect the fact that these platforms are being effectively designed to be purposely addictive. It's the purposeful design that makes the responsibility 100% their fault, in my perspective, because you don't have a go at someone for taking up something that has been designed to be taken up and become addictive. You need to
responsibility at all. If I go home today and spend 16 hours, I don't know, on TikTok, or it absolutely nothing to do with my decision-making whatsoever.
There is a different path in which you have a responsibility I can talk about, but the act of going onto social media and spending 16 hours is 100% the company's fault, because if you haven't got something going on in your life, why wouldn't you think, oh, everyone's doing social media, how about I just jump on? And then all of a sudden you've been doom scrolling for 16 hours. I mean, we've got, again, Mark's email suggesting way back when
yes.
that he needs to up the dwell time on social media.
Yes, Will touched on the dwell time, as it's called. We're out of time. Thank you for that, David. Good luck to you. We will stay with this, but coming up after the news, a Secretary of State for Defence all at sea over questions concerning the capability of our Royal Navy. How many frigates do we have in the fleet?
We have 17 frigates and destroyers.
No, we don't. That number's wrong. And we'll return to that after this. It's 9:31. You're listening to Breakfast with me, Nick Ferrar on LBC. The news is with Dominic Ellis.
The Defence Secretary has told LBC that he's not happy with the number of Royal Navy warships available for deployment. John Healy has confirmed to Nick that the UK is being forced to borrow a German warship to lead a NATO operation next month. The British military has been given permission to board Russian oil tankers passing through UK waters. Sir Keir Starmer has accused Moscow of running a shadow fleet of ships to avoid sanctions and to fund its war in Ukraine. And two men arrested in connection with an arson attack on four ambulances in North London have been released on bail. The vehicles belonging to a Jewish community group were set alight in Golders Green on Monday. LBC weather, a settled and dry day for much of the UK. Some patchy rain in the northwest, a high of 11 degrees.
Hey, smart speaker. Play LBC.
Good morning, I'm Nick Ferrari. It's time to get to your calls.
First-time caller. A little bit nervous.
Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for taking my call.
There is no question. Ending the war is the quickest way to reduce the cost of living. That is my first priority.
Hear every side of the story.
I would not be surprised if they put troops on the ground.
Really, really sad what we've become as a country. Basically, an example of how our country is just in decline.
Starmer is going to have to get involved, but in a very limited way, because I think we are quite exposed.
I'm at the petrol station and it's just cost me nearly £100 to fill up half.
Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app. LBC, leading Britain's conversation.
My name is Paul and this is my NHS story. I started to notice that the hip was becoming numb. The GP referred me for an x-ray, and just being informed, being kept in the loop, I feel much better in myself and I feel confident about how the future is going to unfold.
The government is opening new community diagnostic centres, with many already available 12 hours a day, 7 days a week, so the NHS can be there for all of us when we need it. Find your closest one at gov.uk/NHS Fit for the Future. Available England-wide.
Jay here knows that Zoopla can provide valuations for any home in the UK, so we can see what that new couple across the road might have paid.
Ooh la la.
Have a nose at what the curtain twitchers next door could sell for. And even see what his own place is worth.
Cool, look at that.
Plus, Zoopla lets you find and compare local estate agents if you do decide to sell up. Think of all those new neighbours you'll be able to snoop on, Jay. If you want to know, just ask Zoopla.
This time last year, Hassan was working in sales and spent his evenings gaming. Now, he's working as a prison officer.
You know what's coming up, it's not worth it. Let's just go in there.
He's tackled cell fires, got through to some of the most challenging prisoners, and helped support their rehabilitation. He's done things he once thought he was never capable of, but he still loves his gaming. An extraordinary job, done by someone like you. Search prison jobs now.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
All right, let's come back to an interview that was held a little over 2 hours ago. Not just covering the news, we're making the news with this interview. Now, the Defence Secretary, John Healey, was on to talk about how British military will be given powers to interdict, as it's called, to intercept, whatever you want to call it, the so-called shadow fleet for Vladimir Putin. But the interview coincided with the day that it was revealed on the front page of one newspaper, the I paper, that we are commanding a joint operation next month in the Atlantic and the Baltic, and the Royal Naval Command will be done from a German ship because we have no warships available for it. So I started off on that aspect, asking Mr. Healey how embarrassing that was.
Well, first, I'm really proud of the Navy and the civilian contractors.
I'm hugely proud. Indeed, I agree. My father served in the Army.
They've got Dragon ready in 6 days from a maintenance programme.
Yeah, we're not talking about Dragon, respectfully, sir. We're talking about the fact that this operation next month will have Royal Naval Command on a German ship because we haven't got one available. And you don't think that's a national embarrassment?
You know, first and foremost, that's a sign of the strength of NATO alliance. It's why that we defend, we train, we fight together with allies. But I'm not happy with the situation we have with British warships. And that's because it takes six years to build a warship, I tell you. You know, in the past 14 years of previous governments, they cut the number of frigates and destroyers by a quarter. They cut the number of mine-hunting ships by a half. They cut the defence budget by £12 billion in the first 5 years. We're starting to fix these problems. We can't do that overnight. But the fact that we're spending £300 million more on British shipbuilding this year is a sign that we're beginning to turn things round.
How many frigates do we have in the fleet?
We have 17 frigates and destroyers. It's down from 23 at the end of the last Labour government. And as I say, the number of mine hunters have been cut by more than a half. And so that we can meet not just the threats we face now, but the threats in the future, we're doubling down on some of the uncrewed mine hunting capabilities, and I have some of them already pre-positioned in the Middle East. But we can't turn this round overnight. We're putting the investment in now that will help us fix this.
But if we've got a fleet of 17 years,
Mr. Healy,
if we've got a fleet of 17 in total, where are they all?
Well, every nation with every piece of its military kit has some in operation, some on deployment, some in states of readiness, some being repaired and maintained.
We only have
it's
one in operation.
Regular rhythm that is common to military planning.
We only have HMS Dragon in operation down there now. Where are all the others? Are all the others being repaired in some way, shape or form?
I'm proud of what we're able to do. I'm proud of the fact that the forces we've got have risen to the challenges in the Middle East.
I know, sir, but are they all being repaired, or are they not functioning correctly? 17 vessels. We would have known for months that we were heading this operation in April. Why did it not occur to someone, well, we're going to need one of our warships because we're commanding the operation in April. Let's make sure it's available. Why did that not occur to anyone?
We were preparing Dragon for that flagship role.
So we have one warship available because Dragon had to go to Cyprus.
I have to make decisions based on what we've got. We were preparing Dragon in order to play that flagship role. The way that Iran hit back in an indiscriminate, widespread way meant I needed to reinforce the defences that we'd already, before the conflict broke out, put into the Middle East. It's why our pilots have been able to fire defensive missions from day one. It's why our British pilots have now racked up over 1,000 hours of flight. And we can't just allow ourselves to focus fully on the Middle East. It's why we've had British Royal Navy ships shadowing Russian warships through the English Channel last week and in the first week of the Middle Eastern conflict. We face threats on a number of fronts. And my message really today on this is that Putin wants us to be distracted and preoccupied by the Middle Eastern conflict. People are rightly worried about that, but we won't take our eye off the Russian threats. We won't take our eye off Putin's activities and his increasing aggression.
Current Defence Secretary John Healy, former Defence Secretary under the Conservatives, Sir Ben Wallace, joins me now. Sir Ben, it's all your fault. It's the inheritance, it's the money that wasn't spent under 14 years of Conservative or Conservative-led control. Good morning to you, Sir Ben.
Good morning, Nick. As you know, I was regularly on your show, both as Defence Secretary and sometimes battling with my own government on it. There are lots of faults going way back to the 1991, where both Labour and Conservative and coalition governments hollowed out defence, took its peace dividend way beyond it should. Some of that has been rectified. Under my watch, I got an extra $24 billion. And obviously, John Healy and the Prime Minister talk about an increase in defence spending. So the momentum is upwards. But I think if you're going to solve the problem with spin, you're actually doing a disservice to all of us. I regularly hear the Labour government's defence spin. The defence investment plan, which they've been working flat out, is the phrase they deploy in their press releases to deliver it, is about, I don't know, 6-7 months late, which obviously costs a lot of money. And John Healy needs to tell you that one of the reasons we don't have ships available, it's not about how many you've got. It's because the government has refused to give defence the money it needs. And the only way you save the money in year is you stop operating, you stop training, you stop operating, you stop being available. And that's why HMS Dragon wasn't available. You know, he also should really start with the correct number of frigates and destroyers. We basically have 6 Type 45s and 7 Type 23s available. The Type 45s are the anti-air ships. Off the 6, we probably really have 4 really available. 2 of them are pretty much in long-term maintenance. And we have about 7 Type 23s. So we have, in reality, we've probably got 9 ships available if we wanted to. The moment they are not being given the training, the operating budget, because the government's had to find £2 billion of cuts in year to the day-to-day running costs of the armed forces. And that's the simple reality of why there wasn't HMS Dragon available at the time. And the department was loaded up with, on day one, Rachel Reeves' unfunded commitments, pay rises without the money to follow it. They had to make plans for the Chagos Island spending next year. And all the national insurance increases that the defence contractors pay, that gets passed back to the department. So they've had to scrabble around and find it, which has meant less availability. And we're paying for that now because the world's got more dangerous and there's less available. We are replacing ships. I ordered up to 8 Type 26 ships that are being made in Glasgow at the moment and 5 Type 31s that are being made in Dunfermline, 3 solid support ships. They were all contracted under my watch or my predecessor's watch. And I bought a cable protection ship, RAF Proteus. So we are replacing it. Unless Defence gets its money, we'll all have them tied up alongside.
Sir Ben, you served as Defence Secretary for a number of years. The United Kingdom will lead or command an exercise in the Atlantic Ocean and the Baltic Sea next month. Typically, how much notice of that would the MOD have had? Which calls into question, quite incredibly, that the Royal Navy will command this from a German ship.
Plenty of notice. It's a NATO, it'll be a standing NATO commitment, or it'll be a commitment designed well over a year ago, and we will have been having to plan for that. We'll be planning, for example, for the next carrier deployment 2-3 years out, wherever that goes, because of the requirements around it. Ultimately, they didn't have the money to have the other available ships. Dragon was then diverted to the Gulf. And, you know, here's an example of the changes. And this is entirely on Labour's lap. I'm afraid to say they want to make it partisan. And John Healey seems to make things partisan. When I was there, we had a warship based in Bahrain, HMS Montrose, I think it was. And we didn't change the ships. We just changed the crew. So we kept it permanently on station down there. When it needed to be mended or fixed, it went to Oman, Duckham, to be serviced. So we always had availability and just rotated crews through. Right. They've stopped doing that. They decommissioned, if you remember, Bulwark and Albion, the two marine commando ships,
yes,
which I wouldn't allow in my time. That meant the Bay-class ship, like the mothership that was based in Bahrain, has to come home. And that's why we've got nothing there. That's all on their watch.
Final question, Sir Ben. You might not want to play the man rather than the ball, but he should have been on top of his numbers, shouldn't he, Sir Ben?
I have some sympathy for that, Nick. You are a master at finding out. But I think what should have happened is it's always best to reply not with spin or lines to take nonsense from your special advisers or officials. You should just be honest. I heard all day people saying, all morning, to John Healey, are you in dispute with the Treasury about the Defence Industrial Plan? Right? You know, because I used to say it to you.
Mm.
There's nothing wrong with him saying, yes, I am. I'd like more money and the Treasury won't give it to me. There's nothing wrong with saying this thing happens all the time amongst government departments. I'd like more money. It's really important. But instead, we get a sort of evasiveness. And that's no good to the men and women of the armed forces who know exactly what's really going on.
Always enjoy speaking with you. Thanks for your time. Former Defence Secretary Sir Ben Wallace. A political reaction from our political editor, the other side of the 9:45 LBC News headlines, read by Dominic Ellis.
The Defence Secretary has been accused of a shocking failure to explain how many warships the UK has available. The British military has been given permission to board Russian oil tankers passing through UK waters. And Sir Keir Starmer says tougher regulations for social media is a matter of when, not if, following a landmark ruling in the US. LBC weather, a settled and dry day for much of the UK. Patchy rain in the northwest, a high of 11 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Delays on the M4 eastbound up to Junction 3 at the Parkway at the A312 junction. There's a load of debris across the road. The Rotherhithe Tunnel and the Limehouse Link Tunnels both stay closed, and that's because of an ongoing technical problem, and it's causing severe delays in the area. In Forest Gate, there's been an accident on Romford Road westbound right near to Upton Lane, and that means there are delays on the approach. On the train, South Eastern can't run between Sevenoaks and Orpington because a train has broken down. Also, some minor delays on C2C services at Fenchurch Street. And on the Underground, there are minor delays on the Bakerloo line and also on the Central line between White City and Ealing Broadway.
Coming up at 10 on LBC, James O'Brien.
Big news from the United States regarding addiction to social media and the efforts put into creating it. And should the King still go to America?
James O'Brien at 10. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
Calling all young creatives. It's time to get prep for the media business. And where better than Global Academy? Here's Atina, a media business student in year 12.
Being a young creative at Global Academy means that I get to turn my passion into a career. From studying creative enterprise, I've already learnt how to market my own business and gain knowledge about the business side of the industry.
Global Academy. Apply now and join us in years 10 or 12. GlobalAcademy.com.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060 973. This is LBC.
Pain in my hip.
I keep feeling dizzy.
I'm getting migraines more often.
There's another way to contact your GP practice, by simply sending your symptoms and requests through their website or the NHS app. We're delivering an NHS fit for the future. Tap it, type it, and we'll take care of it.
Julia, how do you spell vertebrae?
Oh, just type pain in the neck.
Pets in a pickle. We're here when it matters most. For fuss-free pet insurance policies as unique as they are, visit petsinapickle.co.uk.
Buying a home on a holiday park was the retreat you always wanted. But then came unexpected site fee increases. And that was before the dramatic loss in value. If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, you may have been missold. HolidayParkAdviceCentre.co.uk could help you receive thousands in compensation. Text ASSIST to 78900. That's ASSIST to 78900.
A Southern train is a place where you can have more me time. A chance to skip traffic and glide to wherever you need to be. With headspace to focus on more important matters. Like if that cloud is a starfish or sunflower. Fast journeys without the rush with great deals at southernrailway.com. Terms apply.
So, what's on your to-do list today? Why don't you check if you're eligible for pension credit? It tops up your pension income and also opens up help with heating bills, council tax, and more. Search pension credit on gov.uk or call 0800 99 1234. There's nothing to lose. Check today. Pension credit. Credit where credit's due. Eligibility criteria apply.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
Let's stay with our conversation about that interview with John Healy and the exact capability of the Royal Navy. LBC's political editor Natasha Clark joins me now, picking up on reaction from other political parties. Natasha, what are people saying? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Yes, my inbox filling up fast with comments from all across the political spectrum at the reaction to your interview with the Defence Secretary this morning. The news that the Royal Navy Command will be on a German, not a UK ship, and appearing to struggle to say how many frigates we do have currently. I've just got this exclusive message in from the Reform UK leader, Nigel Farage. He says, this is embarrassing. It belittles our nation on the world stage. A Navy run down by the Conservatives and now virtually inoperable. We've also just had some response in from the former Foreign Secretary, Sir James Cleverly. He says of your interview, stuttering, hesitating, clearly being passed notes by his special advisor. This is a humiliating exchange. He's supposed to be the Defence Secretary, not the Defensive Secretary. He's supposed to prevent strength, not weakness. We've also been hearing from the Tory MP and Shadow Defence Minister, Mark Francois. He did not have much good to say, Nick.
John Healy's train crash performance earlier illustrates just what a mess defence is now in under Labour. Whilst they've continually claimed to be increasing defence spending by a record amount since the Cold War, they're fibbing. They've cut day-to-day defence spending by over £2.5 billion. And we're now seeing the practical effects of that in that the Royal Navy is struggling to prepare one destroyer to go to sea for a NATO exercise of which they've had months and months of notice.
And Nick, of course, the Labour Party as well, the backbenchers, they are worried about this interview as well. One has messaged to say they've already had a ton of their own messages about this morning. None of them have been good. Tan Desi, the Labour Defence Select Committee chair, who spoke to earlier this week after the Prime Minister was at the liaison committee, says this morning the inability of the UK to be able to deploy a vessel for this long-known NATO commitment is just a further example, serving to underscore the Defence Committee's concerns regarding the UK's lack of capabilities. The lack of the defence investment plan has only increased uncertainty around the UK's ability to play a full and leading role in NATO. And Nick, the sources close to the Defence Secretary this morning say that the number of warships that the Defence Secretary was talking to was correct. It is now down to 17. They say it is cut by the Conservatives, despite obviously what our experts have been telling us all morning, that he may have been incorrect. They also stressed the Defence Secretary was not going to be able to get into the detail about where they are right now, and that there is more than just HMS Dragon which is involved in keeping us safe. Nick.
Natasha Clark, LBC's political editor, reporting. Well, we've heard from Sir Ben Wallace, who was a defence secretary until 2023. We've heard from Francis Chuser, who's an acknowledged defence expert, been in that field for more than 20 years, that he got his numbers wrong. Now, whether they've found a couple that are still being repaired or something, I don't know. But for one former defence secretary to say the numbers are wrong, I think we might take that. And here's the thing. While you don't build a battleship overnight, and while I think, by the way, respective governments, which of course includes the Conservatives and Labour prior to them, and even the Lib Dems, they're all got some guilt attached to them here. What is indefensible from the Defence Secretary or the Ministry of Defence is that they will have known, well, Sir Ben reckons possibly years, certainly many, many months, that next month's operation is commanded by the UK Navy, by the Royal Navy, operations in the Atlantic and the Baltic. And somehow they have managed that when we take command of that fleet, the Royal Navy will be serving on a German ship. They can't dance away from that. They can't blame that on 14 years of Tory misrule. This is what you're saying on text and other ways. Mark in Power says it sounds like Joe Biden has become our defence secretary. Neil in Liverpool, Lord Nelson must be spinning in his grave. Richard in East Kilbride, John Healy, if this is a sign of the sharpness and science required to get a job in a government cabinet, let's pray we don't go to war. Paul's in Marazion, in Cornwall. Paul, you're on the radio. Your reaction. Good morning.
Staggered, Nick. Can't put it any other way. Mm. What he didn't tell you is we have six of these T-45 air defence destroyers.
Yes.
That they all claimed were work of the state of the art when they were built. Whatever. One of them has been in Portsmouth for 8 years, awaiting for...
Now, how do you know this from online? Do you have someone who's working on it? Do you have someone who's there? How do you know this?
We're a naval family.
Your naval family.
Just use Google, Nick. It'll tell you.
Well, that's my worry, of course, sir. Not that I'm not taking away from you from your Royal Naval heritage, but I you can't really rely on Google all the time.
No, well, it's publicly available information. You can't really get it wrong. It hasn't left Portsmouth. It's in for what they call the Power Improvement Project.
Ah. It can serve in different waters. Is that right?
That's right. Well, yeah. Originally they were designed with two generators.
Right.
And they found that the two generators didn't produce enough electrical power to drive the ship. And they all tripped out. They're having to cut these things open, take out the two underpowered generators and squeeze three in. And this literally takes about 2 to 2 years at least per ship to do this, because it's a major surgery. But HMS Daring was the first one of these things. It only served for a couple of years before it was found to be... It's a design flaw.
Let me ask you this, Paul. As a naval bloke with naval lineage, how do you respond to where the Royal Navy finds itself now?
It's sad, Nick. If you go around Portsmouth Dockyard now, it's a shadow of what it once was. They don't employ any people. It's both contractors, BAE Systems and Babcock.
And the brave men and women who serve in the Navy and all our armed forces. At the top is the Defence Secretary, who doesn't know his numbers.
Well, he was hopeless, wasn't he? And, I mean, he was just... he lost for words, wasn't he?
I think he was. Or being handed notes, possibly. That's what we think, because he wasn't in video. Paul, thank you. Intriguingly, he wasn't in video, although he had been prior with Sky News and with the BBC. But then he said his video link doesn't work in the bunker or something. I don't know. Was he being handed pieces of paper? Was somebody whispering in his ear? One of my colleagues saying, almost saying, holding his fingers up to count the number of boats. We'll never know. Kevin's in Basingstoke. Kevin, you're on the radio. Good morning.
Yeah, morning, Nick. Yeah, apart from Nigel Farage, you love it when there's a politician in and you ask him a load of questions and they get one wrong.
Well, I don't know about getting one wrong. I do think if you're the Secretary of State for Defence, it might be a good idea to know how many ships you've got.
Why? That's not his job. It's more political and budget.
It's not his job. Sorry, he's just been caught up in the most extraordinary row about not being able to deploy a frigate down to Cyprus to defend a base there. Do you not think when all that was going on, he would have said, how many ships have I got?
Nick, when I go to the doctor, he doesn't know everything. I'm a painter and decorator. If I don't know the answer to something, I just look it up. Doesn't mean I'm no good at my job.
No, but people's lives are not depending on your painting and decorating.
Well,
Armed Forces personnel's lives are dependent on this, Kevin.
The answer to the question.
Pardon me?
He does want to go to the doctor and he doesn't know the answer to the question. He just looks it up.
All right, Kevin. Well, I appreciate that line. On this one, I'm afraid we're going to have to disagree. I think the men and women who are brave enough to serve, they deserve someone at the top of the Ministry of Defence who actually knows what's going on. Kevin, thank you. John in Enfield. John, you've got about a minute. Go ahead, sir. All yours.
Oh, hello, yeah. I think you just caught John Healy's Diane Abbott moment there, so well done for that, basically.
Right. Okay. Are we in a position to defend us? This is the reality of the world that's getting more and more tense, almost by the hour, with a situation like this.
Nick, we're able to defend ourselves. We're unwilling to defend ourselves, yeah? Just look at the IRGC now. We're the only country in the world that still prescribed them as a terrorist.
Hasn't prescribed them.
I think Saudi Arabia has just expelled a bunch of them, and in the Middle East, I think Lebanon as well. So that's a red rag, right? Now, the thing is, he talks about Ukraine's interest, protect against the Russians. Mm-hmm. The only thing in the room that he hasn't crossed is that China's actually funding the Russian war. Yeah, without China, this war wouldn't exist. And this government is falling heads over heel to back China. So they're absolute hypocrites. I actually call him Sakir Stalin, for God's sake.
Sakir Stalin?
Stalin, yeah.
Because Stalin! Sorry, I thought you said, like, the bird. I couldn't... Sakir Stalin, OK. Yeah, well, he was hardly a stormer from Starmer yesterday, was it? John, we'll make that the last word. Thank you. Apologies to others that we can't get to. Now, if you missed any of today's show, listen back on our free Global Player app or the LBC app, where you can also stay up to date with all the latest news, videos and opinions. Download the official LBC app for free from your app store now. James O'Brien's the other side of the news. I'm back with you tomorrow morning from 7. Meantime, stay safe.
Thank you, Nick. How many times have we sat here and wondered what it would take for the big tech companies that now exercise an extraordinary stranglehold over our societies in a whole variety of ways to start behaving responsibly or to start acknowledging the dangers and the horrors that they inflict upon people of every age? We're often in danger sometimes of focusing exclusively on the youngsters. Well, I think that the process may finally be underway after a truly pivotal court case in the United States of America found that Meta, the owner of Facebook and other platforms, and YouTube deliberately design addictive products. I want to dig into this with your help.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock, the Defence Secretary says he's not happy with the number of Royal Navy warships available for immediate deployment. John Healy was asked for the figures during an interview here on LBC this morning, but struggled to answer.
We have 17 frigates and destroyers. It's down from 23 at the end of the last Labour government.
Shadow Communities Secretary Sir James Cleverly has called it a humiliating exchange. The government says it plans to spend £300 million on shipbuilding this year. The Prime Minister has denied there's a link between his former Chief of Staff's phone being stolen and the release of files about Lord Mandelson. Morgan McSweeney resigned last month after many blamed him for pushing the peer's appointment despite his links to Jeffrey Epstein. Opposition parties have raised concerns the theft means related messages could be lost. Starmer has denied there's a conspiracy, though.
It was stolen, it was reported at the time, and the police have acknowledged and confirmed that that is what happened.
And the idea that somehow everybody could have seen that sometime in the future there'd be a request for the phone is, to my mind, a little bit far-fetched.
Prince Harry and Meghan say a ruling on social media companies in the US is a victory for parents. Meta and Google have been ordered to pay £4.5 million in damages to a woman who said their platforms damaged her mental health. They both say they will appeal the decision. The UK is facing weaker economic growth and higher inflation because of the war in the Middle East. The OECD says the conflict could lead to global energy shortages and higher food prices as well. It expects UK inflation to average at 4% this year, up from the 2.5% forecast in its latest reports. And a study's found second-hand smoke exposure in Scotland is down by 96% since a ban came into force. It's been 20 years since Scotland became the first part of the UK to legislate against it. In the city a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading down 131 points at 9,974. The pound buys $1.33 and a euro 15. LBC weather, a mixed day across the UK with patchy cloud and rain in the northwest, staying dry elsewhere with a high of 11 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Lottie Morley.
Hey Sainsbury's, I'm cooking for everyone this Easter, but I don't want to break the bank. Got any tasty offers?
Well, with Nectar, there's half price on selected sides of salmon. And selected beef joints and whole legs of lamb are better than half price.
Ooh, they'll be as happy as my wallet.
Sainsbury's, good food for all of us. 18 plus, Nectar required, excludes locals, ends 7th of April, subject to availability. T's and C's apply.
Is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
Three minutes after 10 is the time. When I say the word addiction, what do you think of? Does that anybody else think of Sam O'Maguire in Grange Hill back in the day? I think of Michael Douglas occasionally as well, because I think Michael Douglas was the first person I ever heard of who was diagnosed with or claiming to have a sex addiction. And that, to my younger ears, sounded a little bit fanciful. It sounded a little bit unlikely. I understand the issue a lot better now, of course. But the idea that you could be addicted to sex seemed strange to me when that phrase first appeared in the public vocabulary. It shouldn't have done, of course, because almost everything that is potentially addictive, possibly even everything that is potentially addictive. I'm trying to think. You can probably hear the wheels turning, can you? Or the cogs whirring. Is there anything that is potentially addictive that is not immediately addictive? When crack cocaine first appeared in this country, the reportage was, or the reputation was, that if you had one toke or puff or whatever the young people say of crack cocaine, then you would be in the throes, in the grip of a hideous and violent addiction within nanoseconds. I don't think that's true. This is one of the areas where I speak with no experience. But Billy Idol told me the other day. That's a phrase. Should we just pick that name up off the floor? There's a phrase I haven't. I don't think I've used that phrase enough in the last couple of weeks since I sat down with Billy Idol for a full disclosure episode. Billy Idol told me the other day that he used crack cocaine to get him off heroin, which was a very interesting insight into his past. But it was also an insight into the varying natures of addictive materials. He's using crack cocaine, which of course was always portrayed to us as the most addictive thing imaginable, to get off heroin, which takes us back to Sam O'Maguire. It's almost like I planned this stuff in advance, isn't it? Just say no, kids. And then gambling is something that many of us find enjoyable without being remotely addicted to it. I think the last bet I placed was on Kidderminster Harriers to win the FA Trophy. A market so small that when I placed the bet, the odds actually shrunk in real time. I could see the odds come down on the computer screen. But everything that is addictive is pleasurable, right? I mean, you don't not enjoy something to the point where you do it again, and then you somehow cross a threshold, right? You somehow cross a cross. Sorry, turned into Sean Connery. You somehow cross a Rubicon, wherein you are no longer choosing to do it. You have to do it. The line between compulsion, if you like, compulsion and contentment. Oh, that's nice. We'll use that again. The line between contentment and compulsion is impossible to see. I guess you can, you realise fairly quickly, do you, when you're on the wrong side of it? But you don't really notice it approaching until it's too late. So what would you put? I mean, drugs, alcohol, good example. I think that if alcohol was invented now, many governments would probably prohibit it. Cannabis, technically not as addictive as other things in a chemical sense, but obviously in a behavioural sense. Sex can be, pornography can be addictive. Eating disorders often have addiction built into them, don't they? All sorts of things. I'll tell you somebody else I've been talking to a lot about this lately is Marcus Brigstock. Absolutely lovely man whose background, whose childhood, I had very little idea, was incredibly difficult. All sorts of addictions, many of which he's talked about before, but he's a really intelligent and insightful commentator on the nature of these conditions and, of course, the process of recovery and rehabilitation. But you can be addicted to pretty much anything that brings you pleasure. People can get addicted. If you're addicted to pornography, then in a sense you're addicted to masturbating, right? We know people no longer snigger at the idea of Michael Douglas being addicted to sex, because if you're addicted to sex, it can ruin your life. Obviously, it will ruin your relationships, but it can ruin your life as well. We've got images of drug addicts in bus shelters or whatever the cliche du jour may be, but there will also be people who are addicted to substances, whether they're illegal or legal, who you're at work with at the moment. Or who you are in your circle of friends or your family, you may know, you may not know. There is so much to addiction that is hard to grasp for those of us who have never been in its grip. And I think about that. I was trying to think this morning about the sort of flirtations that you have with addiction, or what the foothills of addiction might look like. And in terms of technology, it's tricky. I don't want to make light of what we're going to talk about shortly, but I think to some of those games that really were engineered to make it almost impossible to turn off. If you got caught up in Candy Crush, for example, back in the day, then you'll know that you were playing it in ways that were just profoundly and supremely unhealthy. Right, I'll just have one more go. 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 And you know, I go back far enough. Tetris was but not like addictive. And then I remember an old pal of mine who's not with us anymore. And he was a marketing guru. He was one of the absolute